Good evening. Good evening, folks. Our first order of business is public hearing on local law number B, that would be letter B, of 2018, a local law to modify local law number 2 of 2015, a local law to, we love repetition, so to establish a sustainable energy loan program in Tompkins County. Is there anyone here to speak on that local law? Carol, go ahead. Welcome. Carol Chalk from our prior life here at the county legislature. Welcome. Mike's not on, Carol. Mike.
Can we make this shorter? Because I'm going to need it in a few minutes. Thank you. No, that's good.
Thank you.
Yeah, is that good?
Great.
Okay, that'll help later, too. I have a short speech. Please do this. I'm glad that it's come back and that it's big, better than ever. And thank you for working on it. That's all.
Thank you, Carol. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak as part of the public hearing? Irene?
Ditto that.
That would be Irene Weiser from the town of Caroline. Anyone else? All right, I'll close the public hearing. Thank you. Would you please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? I guess I should have probably called the July 17th, 2018 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Consider that done. And our first item of business, I want to hand over to Dan Klein, legislator from Danby and Caroline. Oh, man. I guess we should do roll call. What's the matter with me tonight? Okay. Let's do the roll call. Let's do roll call first. Thank you, Kathy.
Mr. Maury?
Oh, here.
You felt bad for us.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes, here.
Ms. Black?
Here.
Ms. Champion?
Here.
Ms. Dawson?
Here.
Mr. Granison?
Here.
Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Kellis?
Here.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Ms. Corman?
Present, and if I knew how to say it in a foreign language, I would.
I was just about to say.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Putin next to her.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
I am present.
Mr. McKenna?
I am here.
Ms. Robertson?
Most of me is here. I'm here.
14 members present.
We haven't been celebrating anything yet, so trust me. Okay. Dan Klein, legislator from the towns of Caroline and Danby, please come on up.
I've got a proclamation I'd like to read about someone who was my supervisor for many years at Cooperative Extension when I worked for the Beautification Brigade, which I'm now a volunteer for. And so it gives me a lot of pleasure to read this. Whereas Monica Roth has been working at Tompkins County Cooperative Extension for almost 40 years, and whereas when she started her work, she was the sole employee in the Tompkins County Cooperative Extension Agriculture Program, and whereas there are now 8 to 10 employees in that program, plus numerous volunteers, student employees, and interns, and whereas Monica started the environmental program at Tompkins County Cooperative Extension, which now has 11 employees plus numerous volunteers, student employees, and interns, and whereas Monica Roth has been on the leading edge of the local foods movement, finding funding for a local foods program and coordinator long before the idea hit the mainstream, and whereas Monica has guided the local farmers market from a gathering of a few a few farmers in a parking lot to a major institution that has four markets a week, has a permanent structure, is a major tourist attraction, provides income for scores of farmers, craftspeople, and food vendors, and has spawned rural satellite markets throughout the county. And whereas Monica Roth started the compost education program, the community beautification program, the citizen pruners, and was a co-founder of the Ithaca Children's Garden, and whereas Monica's other successful initiatives in support of local agriculture, horticulture, food, and the environment are too numerous to list, now, therefore, be it resolved that the residents of Tompkins County express their gratitude to Monica Roth upon her semi-retirement for her contributions to the quality of life in Tompkins County and beyond. Monica, you want to come on up?
It rained last night, so see what else I can do. But I really want to just say, Dan, of course, knows me through horticulture and marketing and local foods, but he probably didn't pay as much attention to the agriculture work we've been doing. And that's really the key thing that I think we have been instrumental in supporting the agriculture district program. We helped create it in the beginning at Cooperative Extension. We consolidated it from 8 districts to 2, so it made some efficiency in the review process. We help with the reviews. That's major data gathering every time we do the 8-year review. And it provides us information that it's the only place you can get data that is town-specific related to agriculture. So we use that information, communicate that to the towns, and we've helped towns write, we've written the town agriculture plans for 4 towns in the county now, and obviously also the countywide Ag and Farmland Protection Plan. We wrote the first one in 1996. We just did an update a couple of years ago. And that's really the document that forms the work that we do in agriculture at Cooperative Extension. We support the Ag and Farmland Protection Board. It's probably, you should be proud of this, it's probably one of the most active boards in the state. Many counties don't have their cooperative extension as plugged in as we are, and so I think we do a lot for agriculture. But I do think as citizens, as policymakers, community members, we need to do more. We really need to support agriculture, farmland protection, local foods, and I look forward to continuing to work in this arena and helping to make things happen in our county. Thank you.
And I want to say, if you want to have a good party, be a friend of the farmers, because the celebration on Sunday evening at the farmers market was wonderful.
Yes.
So lots and lots of people really acknowledging Monica's work. Thank you.
Thank you. That was fun. Thanks.
Right. Thank you very much, Dan, for writing that proclamation and for helping us to mark the occasion. I'm going to be reordering some of the resolutions so that we don't keep too many people here any longer than they want to be. So just if you're waiting for a specific thing and I haven't gotten around to you, just somebody let me know. But first thing is public privilege of the floor. And I hope everybody will follow the rules that I'm going to read quickly. You have the clock on the wall there. I agree to by signing the blue sheet, I agree to a 3-minute time limit. I agree not to raise my voice. I agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of the peace. I agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, I agree to yield, to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. I agree that if I cause a disruption and am asked to leave, I will leave the chambers. First is, again, Carol Chalk, and then Colette
Mealy.
Thank you.
Hi.
Thanks.
Colette, it's almost your turn. That's my granddaughter. I'm Carol Chalk. I'm from the city of Ithaca. And this is too high again. I'm here to talk about Resolution T, the New York State emissions rules for the energy producers. We've been here before talking about the fine points of dirty energy. Tompkins County put ourselves on the New York State map during the hydrofracking debate, asking questions, passing 8 resolutions, urging New York State to work on the public behalf for clean air and a healthy planet. Not only was our intuition right that burning methane, instead of requiring truly renewable energy to be built, wasn't the answer, but in 2011, Bob Howarth, Tony Ingraffia, and their teams came out and taught us about exactly why that was true. This is going to be the real kindergarten version. Sorry, you'll hear from them later. If we burn fuels that create carbon dioxide like coal, then in 100 years, the climate might change so much that our grandchildren will have a hard time surviving and the Earth may take a very long time, if ever, to recover. But oy vey, as my grandmother used to say, we should only have all that time to find out. Because I can't read here, sorry. Because many scientists have now verified that methane doesn't last as long up there for emissions, but while it's there, in only a few decades, it can be a big problem. Sorry, please. If we switch to burning natural gas as a fuel instead of to true renewables, we'll feel the impact much sooner. So with Tompkins County in the lead in the past, New York State banned the drilling process itself. It set greenhouse gas goals. Tompkins County set greenhouse gas emissions goals. Bob and Tony were the first scientists to write about the problem with methane, but now their work has been corroborated over and over, and the newer science shows that the impact of methane might be stronger than they thought and happen faster. The scientists, appropriately, continue their iterations on the specific numbers, as always, and we will try to keep up. New York State needs to keep up with the science that we knew in 2011. If New York State is rewriting the rules for power plants now for their emissions, they're not likely to revisit the new rules anytime soon. New York State needs to write emissions rules that count methane as well as carbon dioxide. Tompkins County can be a leader and insist on it. So thank you for that. I also will just put in a plug for your sanctuary resolution and for Indigenous Peoples Day. Thanks.
Thank you, Carol. Then Coco Mealy.
Was for you.
And followed by Joe Wilson.
Thanks. She wanted this.
My name is Colette. I live in New York City, and once I had to go to the doctor to breathe into a tube, and now I want to talk about bumblebees. Bumblebees are going extinct from bad air. Help fix it. Thank you.
Thank you, Colette.
She wrote that herself for you, and she came here and practiced. So she'll be back in future years. And some of you remember her when she was 18 months old, toddling around.
Thank you so much. Coco, it's great to have you here. Come back anytime. Joe Wilson, and then Tony, Anthony, and Graffia. Joe, follow that. Just go ahead, follow that.
Better start singing, Joe.
Don't I get a senior citizen exemption? I'm Joe Wilson. I'm from the town of Dryden, and I'm also here to talk about Resolution T, also has the number of 7963. As most of you know, I've been active in energy efficiency and climate change matters locally for a number of years now. As you have been told as early as May 2016, Once methane life cycle emissions are taken into consideration, our county is falling behind its goals for reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. To begin to fix that, we need more rigorous state-level regulations. Therefore, the DEC needs to take life cycle methane emissions into consideration in its regulations, and the regulations that the DEC promulgates after this round of comments need to be much more rigorous than they are now. The resolution before you says that as a sense of this body that represents me and many others who are considering and concerned about this issue, so I urge each and every one of you to vote for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Anthony Ingrafia, and then Faye Gugakis.
Tony Ingrafia, Village of Lansing. I'm also speaking to the proposed resolution T. What you've heard from the previous two commenters is all correct, accurate, and true. I won't add anything more to what they said. I want to add what they haven't said. The industry and some regulators would have us believe that methane emissions, which the science now declares without doubt, make a transition from one fossil fuel to another fossil fuel, a so-called bridge to a renewable energy future, totally incorrect, would have us believe that it's pretty easy to fix the problem of methane emissions just by fixing all the leaks over the entire life cycle. I just want to remind you that fixing any leak, even in your sink, costs money. Fixing leaks in the entire fossil fuel infrastructure in the United States would cost hundreds of billions of dollars and would take decades. Number one, that hundreds of billions of dollars would be better spent on renewable energy increase. And number two, we no longer have many decades to fix the problem. The same science which says that methane emissions make burning natural gas worse than burning other fossil fuels is also saying, despite the Paris Agreement, which is not being followed by 190-some nations and certainly not being followed by ours, climate change has accelerated beyond and above the predictions made just a few years ago. We are no longer 100 years from 2 degrees centigrade. We're not 50 years from 2 degrees centigrade. We're about 15 years from 2 degrees centigrade. So we don't have time to waste. We don't have time to waste on proposed fixing of leaks. The best thing to do is for all of us, individuals, families, communities, counties, to do what appears to be simple. Decrease our demand for and use of fossil fuels while simultaneously and synchronously increasing our demand and use of renewable energy. Easier said than done. As legislators, you're well aware of the socioeconomic and political context of that very, very difficult two-edged problem. Making it synchronous so that we don't decrease our standard of living, so that we don't commit additional harms, environmental justice harms, and economic justice harms to those who are currently being most hurt by climate change. That's a very difficult task, and at the county level, it's your task to do. So I just want to conclude by saying I'm available to you as a resource as time goes on. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tony. Faye Gugakis, and then Scott McLeod.
Good afternoon. Is this working?
Hello? Hello? Okay. Faye Gugakis, the City of Ithaca. I'm sad to say that I'm banned again from Green Star Co-op. This is probably the fifth time. I think it's pretty ironic that the previous speakers were talking about climate change. I've been trying to get bicycles to be for people to be able to go to Green Star and have a place to park. And I got banned from that in the fall because Lori, the Green Star member, manager at Oasis, said I was taking up her time. I don't like to be banned from my co-op. I'm a lifelong member. Do you know what a hardship that is? I ride a bike. That's how I go around town. All right? I don't own a credit card. I don't shop online. Okay? Green Star is where I shop. I also shop in other places, but that's one place that's a major stop for me. I got banned because I told a father who was on the floor with his son, and there are cameras, but that's enough, not enough for Green Star. They said I yelled at him. I did not yell at him. I was very polite, and I said, I don't appreciate you taking bowls from the buffet bar that are clean and putting them on the floor to play with your toddler. And he didn't respond to that. So then I went to get coffee, and I saw that he was taking more bowls out from the counter, and there were like four or five bowls on the floor. And I went up to him again, and I said, I'm a lifelong Green Star member, and I would appreciate if you didn't do that. And he says, well, these bowls are going to be washed. And then his wife came up to me and said, well, I'm a Green Star member too. So I figured I'm not going to win that fight. So I went to get my coffee. Meantime, there's two cashiers watching all of this, just feet away. And another person came out, and I told him what happened, and he said to me, you have no right telling him what to do. He said that we don't have a problem with people taking clean bowls and putting them on the floor, and that they're going to be washed. And then as I was checking out and paying for my coffee, the cashier gave me a dollar bill that was very beat up and stuff. And I asked her for a clean one, and she had such an attitude. She put it on the table and looked at me like I don't know. It was a very mean look. And I just very politely told her I didn't appreciate that. Now, is that a reason to be banned from the co-op without knowing when I can go back? So I am pleading with this community that I need help. I am discriminated in a way that has caused me so much grief. I need a lawyer. And if there's anybody out there in this community, which I think helps people, I need justice and I need representation. So I'm pleading with this community for support, if there's anybody out there who could help me. Because you're also helping the planet, because I've been trying to get people to be responsible with their biking and get more people biking, if you will, aside from the Lime bike issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Faye. Scott McLeod and then Judy Pierpont.
Hello, I'm Scott McLeod from the Sophie Fund. Thank you for allowing me to speak today. I'm here to speak in favor of the Zero Suicide Initiative resolution. Using my phone for a notebook. Adopting Zero Suicide model is an important step forward in addressing the public health problem of suicide and the rising suicide rate. Zero Suicide closes cracks in a fragmented and distracted healthcare system. It is proven to dramatically reduce suicide rates where it has been implemented. I'd like to thank and recognize some people who have been driving this in Tompkins County. First and foremost, the legislature, honorable members of the legislature, you adopted the Watershed Declaration Month resolution last September. And now you have before you the Zero Suicide Resolution. I'd like to also thank specifically the Health and Human Services Chairperson, Shauna Black, for her support and initiative to drive this, and her predecessor, Anna Kellis, the previous chair of that committee. I'd like to recognize and thank Lee Ellen Marvin and the Suicide Prevention Crisis Service of Ithaca for their strong support and involvement in suicide prevention in general. I'd like to thank and recognize Frank Krupa and Sharon McDougall from the County Mental Health Services, and particularly Sharon McDougall for having really been the driving force behind the creation of the Suicide Prevention Coalition of Tompkins County, which got up on the ground last July and has made some tremendous progress. I'd like to thank our champions. We have, I think, six or seven what we call zero suicide champions in the county who have stepped up to commit to zero suicide and to begin implementing it. And those champions are the Cayuga Medical Center, Tompkins County Mental Health Services, the CAPS Plan Preferred, the Alcohol and Drug Council, the Cornell Health of Cornell University, Family and Children's Service, and the Suicide Prevention and Crisis Service. I'd also like to thank and recognize the state's support for our efforts here. Jay Carruthers, the director of the State Office of Suicide Prevention under the Office of Mental Health, Sigrid Peschenek, the deputy director, and Gara Lloyd Lester, who is with that office and who has been instrumental in helping us get our coalition off the ground here. Jake Carruthers, the director of the office, the State Office of Suicide Prevention, emailed the Sophie Fund last week with the following message I'd like to read, if I may. Hope it doesn't go over the minutes. But the suicide prevention work done at the community level in Tompkins County over the last two or three years has been extraordinary. Creating community partnerships, raising awareness, decreasing stigma, forming a coalition, and most recently working to integrate suicide prevention and healthcare and behavioral healthcare services, the zero suicide model, it's a wonderful accomplishment.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate you coming. Judy Pierpont and then Irene Weiser, and then I have Sachem George. And then if anybody else wants to sign up to speak, there's more sheets in the back.
I'm Judy Pierpont. I live in Dryden. And I'm also here to support resolution.
Judy, can you get closer to the mic?
I'm Judy Pierpont.
Yeah.
I live in Dryden. And I'm also here to support resolution 7963. All right. Thank you. New York's proposed new guidelines for major power generators don't go far enough to effectively limit greenhouse gases. I'm doing everything I can to stave off climate change. It's coming, it's coming faster than anticipated. It's here, affecting our lives, and will radically harm the world of our children. When will we come to our senses and realize that we have to act now? It is getting late in the game to stem fossil fuel burning to reduce greenhouse gases. It's a good start for the DEC to regulate emissions. Coal, if it passes, will no longer be burned in power plants. But there is an elephant in the room, in the state, in the offices of the DEC. They seem not to want to see methane as a problem as large as coal. They gaze at the good number of one half of the carbon dioxide emissions when burned, one half of that of coal, and completely overlook the now scientifically accepted numbers of carbon dioxide equivalents. Unburned methane escapes into the atmosphere, as Tony was talking about, at every stage of its production, transportation, and use. We know it is a potent greenhouse gas, now found to be 96 times more potent than carbon dioxide in the first 20 years. And those are the years in which we have any chance to reverse climate change. It is more dangerous as a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. So the state, the DEC, should be doing everything it can in its regulation, raising the permitted greenhouse gas emissions level to prevent the burning of gas in place of coal. It is not a better choice, much less a bridge to eventual renewables. It's a dead end. Thank you.
Thank you, Judy. Irene Weiser, then Sachem Sam George.
Hi, I'm Irene Weiser from the town of Caroline. And I, too, am here to support Resolution T. Boy, Judy, that's a tough act to follow. You hit on all the notes. You really did. I'll just say this. I saw a car with a bumper sticker the other day that, for me, summed up my opinion of the state's energy policy. It's that the climate is changing faster than we are. We need to step it up. We don't have a lot of time. It's unconscionable for the state at this point in time, when the governor has already issued rules for regulating methane in other areas of the state, that the DEC would come out with a proposal that doesn't recognize the global warming impacts of methane is mind-blowing. And we are hurtling towards the precipice of no return. We've got to, and really one of the biggest breaks that we have, because as you heard people talk about, methane is 100 times more potent in the next 20 years. But the good news is that it has a really short half-life. It'll be gone. If we stop releasing methane, it's gone, and it actually hits the brakes on global warming a bit and gives us a little bit of breathing room to catch up and get the solar and storage and wind in place that we need. So, I am rarely at a loss for words on this, but I am just dumbfounded that the state is so blind to what they need to do here. And, you know, every fight that we have won with the state, every pipeline that's been stopped, everything that has been won has been won because we raise our voice. And I'm urging you here tonight to do that through this resolution, because somebody at the state needs a wake-up call, and we need to give it. Thanks.
Thank you, Irene. Mr. George, I apologize. I'm not sure how you say your name, so if you would, Mr. George, and then followed by Kathy Russell. Your first name, if you help me out.
No, it's Gano Seguego, Sachem, Sam George, one of the 10 chiefs of the Cayuga Nation. First of all, I'd say welcome to Cayuga territory. You probably never heard that before. Some of you know where you are, some don't. And so I'm here to also support this resolution. I think that's great, because being of one of the original environmentalists, we need to do something about this, and we've been trying to do it for a long time now, and people are not listening. I'm here to give support to the Indigenous Day, People's Day, coming up the second Monday of October. And I'm hoping that Tompkins County will know and do the right thing and know why that is happening. We have been, the Cayuga Nation itself has been taken out of here since over 250 years. The people are back here. We're not going anywhere. We've always been here. Whether it be those noises that you hear in the middle of the night or some strange voice or a drum playing someplace, those are our ancestors letting you know we're still here. We haven't gone anywhere. They're really glad that some of the people are back, because we're starting to do the same things. We're carrying on the culture and the language. It's been coming back here that was gone for a long time. We really want this lake over here to be really clean. It didn't look really clean on the way down here today for some reason. Not as clean as it was 3 years ago. Also, the air that we're starting to breathe is getting a little heavy in spots because of some of the stuff that's going in from these plants around here. I understand some of the farmers are, I don't know if that's a good thing or not, but they're starting to create some damage to the lake itself, not knowing what they're doing, or do they know what they're doing. We need to be educating everyone in our families, in our neighborhoods, about what needs to be done and on the land here, because it needs to change, and it will, one way or the other. Again, thank you for your time. I appreciate you letting me be here today. Always.
Thank you, Mr. George. Kathy Russell.
And that means thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome. Anybody else want to sign up?
Hello. I'm Catherine Russell. I live in the town of Dryden, and I'm in
environmental ethicist. I retired as a philosopher from SUNY Cortland about 4 years ago. And I want to acknowledge that we are standing on Native ground, on Cayuga territory, and my people and me, by inference, are an immigrant here, and I want to support Indigenous Peoples Day. I want to support also, as an immigrant, I want to support immigrants seeking sanctuary here in Tompkins County. Violence takes many forms. It's not only bombs that some army throws. It's also gangs. It's also husbands. And violence needs to be recognized as something immigrants and refugees need protection from. So I urge you to pass this resolution supporting immigrants seeking sanctuary here. I also, as you can see from my Fossil Free Tompkins t-shirt, you might imagine I am in support of the resolution T. And I would call to attention that DEC's mission and its purpose, and it has guidance and policy documents. So we can give some guidance to the DEC by saying that they need to strengthen their emissions requirements for fossil fuel plants and include methane. The science points to that. It is our responsibility to follow the leadership of Native people as the first environmentalists. Thank you for pointing that out. And on this land, anyway. And we need to tell them that you better strengthen your emission standards to include methane. So we can give them guidance so that they can put the requirements on the power plants to measure methane and for all of us to measure methane, as we've seen that Tompkins County emissions have actually gone up if we count the methane. So it's really time for us to say that our state agency to protect the environment, conserve it, is required to include methane in its emission standards. There's no reason that they should not. It's only the responsible thing to do. Give them guidance. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. Fabina Colon, and that's the last card I have.
Good evening. My name is Fabina Colon, and I work with the Multicultural Resource Center. I've also been a Tompkins County resident for too long, almost 25 years. But I'm standing here today because there's a lot of really important topics. I don't see the resolution for Indigenous Peoples Days in the packet, but I'm also here in support for Indigenous Peoples Day, which is very important to me as an Indigenous person who's lived in this community for so long. I have experienced and unfortunately, that Indigenous peoples, the history of Indigenous peoples of this land almost feels to me like has been erased in many of our systems, in our educational system. We learn about Indigenous peoples as if they were a thing of the past. And that continues to happen in our education system. In the environmental advocacy also, you know, there is this notion that environmentalism is something of white, middle, upper class, privileged white people, particularly men, that are doing this work. And this has been something that has been a deep, deep issue that Indigenous peoples of this land have been advocating for since the day colonizers got here. I also would like to acknowledge that particularly with building off of what SACHM Chief Sam George has shared in terms of the history of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, the formation of Tompkins County, and the Cayuga Nation in particular, who were driven out violently from this land, that we owe it as a community, first and foremost, to build acknowledgement of this history, and that we can't continue to erase this history, and we can't continue to put it under the rug, and we must have dialogue and conversation both in our educational systems as well as in our communities of the real history of this land, the people who continue to stand on this land and will continue to be here. So I find this to be very important for us. We have been waiting for hundreds of years to acknowledge the replacement, you know, of Christopher Columbus Day, which now we are aware that we were miseducated about this individual and what they were doing in their voyage. So I stand here to say that I think it behooves us to make sure that we finally build a resolution for this and acknowledge the people, indigenous people, the history of the land, and also to continue to build community and partnership with the indigenous people. Thank you.
Thank you, Fabina. So I would like to, as I said, move things around. But first I want, I see Dux and Noyan in the back over there from the City of Ithaca, so if we can have Dux report, and then I think we'll go to Resolution T, and Fabina, the Indigenous Peoples, is Resolution M. It was our packet, page 69. We'll do that one after T, and then probably the consent agenda to pick up a few resolutions at once. What?
Can you move B up as well?
Well, B's on the consent, so I'll go through the consent, and then I'll go to you for that one. So, Duck. Come on up. Thank you for coming. And I want to thank all the members of the public for coming. We appreciate very much you taking the time to address the legislature. Good evening.
Hello. Just a few things. So, you know, the city received that Bloomberg grant for exploring alternative ways of dealing with addiction. And so a group that includes Fire Chief Tom Parsons, Council Member Steve Smith, Catherine Celentano, and a fourth person that I can't remember right now, has been exploring, doing some research, and that includes, you know, asking users whether they would be interested in using a safe consumption site, a safer consumption site, and visiting New York City and other places for prototyping a layout for how that might look like in STAP here in the community. The other big thing is that we passed an amendment to the city CTAP program that requires 20% affordable housing that's defined as 75% AMI averaged over the past 3 years in projects that receive tax abatements. So it's an additional 30% on top of the additional or the standard abatement that applies to the housing component. Yeah, I guess that's it for that. I wanted to note that because people talk about this a lot, the two State Street projects, East State Street and West State Street, are scheduled for completion roughly October. Actually, on East State Street, the sewer work will be complete in October. The paving, repaving will probably be complete in November. So a few more months of that work.
All right. Thanks so much, Doug. When you say the Bloomberg grant, that was that $100,000 piece of it for the
safe and right. And if we get selected for phase two, it's a bunch more money, but I don't remember how much exactly. And okay. The fourth person was Michelle McElroy.
Okay, so that was phase one you got. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. Any questions or comments for Doc? All right. Thank you so very much. Great to have you here. Resolution T, I'm going to go to Anna, and I would point you to a version in your packet, in your red folder, modification. So, Anna, since this is member filed, she can just move the revised one, right? Yeah.
So I'd like to remove the revised version.
Okay.
Read the title.
Title, Urging New York State Department of Environmental Conservation to Strengthen the Proposed New Guidelines for Major Power Generators, ID number 7963.
All right. Is there a second? Second by Amanda. All right. Do you want to introduce this, Anna?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you guys have heard a lot. I wanted to thank Tony for a lot of the research behind this and the community for constantly keeping this at the forefront of all of our minds. I personally humbly want to thank you both from the Cuba Nation and from the larger community for always fighting for this work, so thank you. The few things that I did want to point out, the amendments were to clarify the exact numbers from the science, and that is in the whereas four, the fourth whereas, and specifically statements taken cumulatively, these show the high risk of using shale gas as fuel, since methane is more than 100 times more powerful as a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide, as reported by the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change in 2013. That's one of the most important factors. The other thing I just wanted to point out is in the beginning of the resolution, it talks about the methane reduction plan. If anybody has had a chance to read that methane reduction plan, it's a plan from New York State, and it outlines the greenhouse gas emission impacts of methane specifically, and it is almost 15 pages of recommendations highlighted to reduce methane production, methane transportation, and methane usage in New York State. So it does talk about the entire system of methane, from policy recommendations to education to outreach. So I highly encourage people to read that, but the fact that that is coming from the state itself and that methane was not acknowledged in this recommendation seems backwards to me. The science is there, and I think that it's important for us to make sure, it's our responsibility to make sure that they follow their own guidelines, their own recommendations, and their own science. So that's all I have to say about it.
Thank you, Anna. And there are a couple smaller changes in the resolves on the second side of this.
Correct. So the small changes in the result, I will get to that. There are scientific references in that fourth were resolved for anybody who wants to follow up on those. And the small changes in the end are wording changes. So in the resolved, it acknowledges the life cycle emissions of shale gas, replacing methane. Again, shale gas was pointed out at the very end of that. And the others are small wording changes. The last resolved removes and to provide more stringent GHG goals. It just says simply when revising the GHG emission standards of major power generation.
Any other discussion? Ready to vote. Oh, Mike?
Which resolution are we?
We're on the proposed revisions, the one that's in your red folder. Resolution T.
Yep, 7963.
Right, correct.
Yep.
Okay, go ahead.
So I'll be quick. I mean, I'm not going to say anything that really hasn't been said yet. I mean, I went to the meeting where they were talking about this. I mean, the basis of this is because the Cayuga Power Company would like to repower with natural gas. I mean, I get what you're saying. The problem with this resolution is you're really not asking for a strengthening of anything. You're asking for fossil free, which is position that a lot of people here take, and I think that's fine. This offers absolutely no solutions to any of the energy problems other than people saying solar and wind, which are not solutions to the problem. I don't hear anybody talking about, you know, we're going to have to do brownouts. I hear nothing about Nine Mile Point that's going to close downstate. I hear nobody talking, hey, let's add nuclear power to the mix because that doesn't actually send carbon dioxide or methane into the atmosphere. I don't hear anybody talking about a one-car policy or a no-car policy for the city. Out of all the towns that are represented here, my town and the village are the only two areas that haven't increased their natural gas use over the past 5 years. And yet, we're going to go after this power plant. Okay. We're not going to go after the Cornell power plant, by the way. 30 megawatts, changed over to natural gas some 8 years ago, runs 24/7, 365 days a year. Not going to go up to them because, God forbid, we should do something like that. But no, we're going to talk about this one. So, okay, like I said, I don't see a lot of solutions here. I just see us setting another goal. And frankly, from everything that's been said here tonight, natural gas is worse than coal, and it makes me wonder why we ever switched from coal. So thanks.
So let me say one thing, and then Deborah, and then Anna. Mike, the second whereas specifically talks about that this is part of a common period that ends July 28th relative to a specific proposed revision to this conservation code. It says nothing about the power plant, about any power plant. It's specifically commenting on a set of regulations, and the reason it didn't go through committee is that we wanted to get this out before the end of the month, before the deadline. So, Deborah and then Anna.
So, I have two beautiful grandchildren, and I shudder to think, for any number of reasons, what kind of world they're going to be living in when they're my age, if they get to my age. And I understand the science behind this, and so I certainly support this. That said, Tony and Grafia, and thank you so much for your comments and your work on this issue, Tony, he was the only one who brought up the issue of the real problem here being a synchronous switch so that we are not crippling ourselves economically.
Yeah, move away from...
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're not crippling ourselves economically as we push ourselves off fossil fuel. So I can understand, certainly, representing as part of my district, the Village of Lansing, the frustrations that this kind of a resolution creates. And I understand Mr. Sigler's frustrations. I appreciate Tony's offer to help us work through the really difficult problem, which is how do we wean ourselves off natural gas and fossil fuels if natural gas is not the bridge fuel, which clearly it's not, and yet not cripple the economies of our towns, particularly Lansing. So I want to say to Tony, game on. I want to hear your ideas. I want your help. And I sincerely hope that this legislature as a whole will consider creating some kind of task force or committee to really focus on what our options are if we're not going to be using natural gas or coal or propane or fossil fuels of any kind, because we clearly need an option to go forward. So thank you.
Anna?
Yeah, I just wanted to add, air doesn't have boundaries. This is about air, period. Greenhouse gas emissions affects the atmosphere that surrounds the entire planet. This is a state policy. It's not a county policy, so it's not about this plant here, and I think that that's really important. I do, however, really honor and recognize that frustration, because if the technology isn't there for the renewables, then we have an issue. But the technology is there. It's the will and the politics and the money that we're talking about. So that's one thing I wanted to point out. The other thing that's really important for us to note is that you brought up many really important issues, but we all know how policies are written. We know how regulations are written. There's no policy that covers every single issue in one policy. It would be a tome that would break any human's back, right? So in this case, it looks like a state policy that addresses a very specific issue, and there are many other policies that address many of the other issues you're talking about, and collectively, they will address what we're looking for. No one of them can be looked at in isolation, but right now we're making public comment about this specific one. So I just wanted to make sure that we all recognize that those other issues aren't, it's not that they're not being addressed. It's just not in this specific policy that we're talking about.
Anyone else? Anybody who hasn't spoken yet? Okay, Mike.
I just want to make a quick point of clarification, though. When we talk about natural gas, I see people do this a lot. They refer to it as shale gas. It's all methane gas, folks. It's all shale gas now. They put it into a pipe. It doesn't matter if it's conventionally come or not. I don't know. I just always find that interesting when people call it shale gas. It's all shale gas now. So,
that's correct, and that's actually why the county's greenhouse gas emissions inventory, why the staff went through such an enormous project of doing that calculation twice. In 2008, when we first drafted, wrote the first emissions policy, Darby, going to help me if I get this wrong. Most of the gas from Tompkins County that was used in Tompkins County was conventionally drilled, conventional gas. That was right about the moment, and that was also true for Cornell's gas plant when they switched from coal to gas. They were also expecting and planning and thinking it was going to be conventional gas. Right around 2008, 2009, 2010 was when shale gas started being fracked and used and came out of Pennsylvania, especially the New York market, especially started using Pennsylvania's gas. And very quickly, there was no more conventional drilling. It was all fracked gas, so all shale gas. So then, thanks to Bob and Tony and many other folks, we looked, we started to learn what were the dramatically larger impacts of shale versus conventional gas. And that was what led the County Planning Department when they redid the emissions inventory to, or was it the, it wasn't the, it was, wasn't the energy roadmap, it was the inventory? Okay. What?
I think
both looked at, had actually calculated calculated our emissions counting by the conventional means and then counting, assuming fracked gas with the, I think we were using at the time, 86% greater global warming impact of gas compared to CO2. So that's where, that's actually referred to, I think that's referred to here. Anyway, that's why this is such an issue. Since Tony and Bob wrote the first article in 2011, there have been a lot of supportive, corroborating studies about the emissions impacts. And unfortunately, the industry has pushed back and people have been slow to change. It's really felt good if we could reduce CO2 emissions by switching to gas, and everybody thought we were doing a great thing. Like so many things we do, there are unintended consequences. So we're learning. And now we've really got to wake up the state and have their calculations correctly reflect what we now know about shale fracked gas. So this is important. It doesn't have to do with the power plant. I will tell you, Deborah, Anna, and I, along with Katie, Irene, and who else is going? Bert Bland, Ken Schlaughter. Tomorrow, 10 o'clock, we're heading out of town. We're going to Albany to meet with NYSEG and the Department of Public Service staff for yet another conversation with them about the non-pipe alternatives and what's happening with the pressure boosters and the compressor stations that were proposed to solve the liability problem in Lansing. This was going to be part of my report. Chair's report, I'm thrown out here now anyway, so my report was shorter. The idea being that NYSEG wrote a letter to the Public Service Commission a couple weeks ago saying, hey, demand wasn't as high as we expected this past winter, and supply was okay, pressure was okay in Lansing. We don't think we need the pressure boosters. We think we're going to go through the non-pipe alternative RFP first and try to see what we can do to reduce demand first. So we are working on this. This is exactly the nub of this problem. How do you support economic development while cutting fossil fuel use? And this is the opportunity that I've
talked to you about before, where Lansing gets the opportunity of bringing ratepayer money in to put new energy systems, renewable heating, into as many homes as we can put into the factories in Lansing, et cetera. So this is the opportunity we have been working on for 2 years. And tomorrow's the next stage of that project. So I actually have been thinking in the last couple of days that maybe we need a new Energy and Economic Development Task Force, Phase 2. We had, you know, the last one was 2015-16, which led to this non-pipe alternative project. Maybe it's time to convene another task force like that one.
So, you're here.
So this is very much on our agenda and our work plan as legislators and a number of other folks in the community and staff. We're not ignoring the other part of the equation. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. Ann?
I just wanted to thank all the people that spoke about this, and I just also wanted to add that we are in New York State. We were slow for the first few years in getting renewable energy, but there's been an uptick the last year or two, and so that we can afford financially and we can afford energy-wise to decommission some of the coal-burning power plants without having to switch over.
All right. Any other discussion? Ready to vote on the revised Resolution T in your red folder. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That passes 13 to 1. Thank you, Anna, for drafting this. Thank you, Tony, Irene, and a bunch of other people I know who were part of drafting it as well. Oh, I hope it's friendly if I ask that we also send it to Peter Olmsted in the governor's office, and I'll get you the name and the title.
Friendly.
All right. Thank you very much. If I could go to Mike Lane for the Indigenous Peoples Day resolution, and that is packet page 69.
Happy to move the resolution, but if she accepts, I'd like to defer to Leslin to speak about it first, since it came from WDIC to our committee, and then I would like to speak about it. Resolution to recognize Indigenous Peoples Day as a holiday in Tompkins County, and I so move.
Second by Leslin, and there is a slight revision in your red folder. Isn't there? No? Not on this one?
No.
Okay.
That's the other one.
That's the other one. Okay.
FPG.
Sorry. Go ahead, Leslin.
Okay.
No, if you don't want
to. No, that is fine. Thank you very much. First, I do want to. Well, I do want to thank the residents who were here representing the Cuyuga Nation who spoke. Sachem George and Debbie, Fabina, and others for coming and speaking to the resolution in support of it. This resolution, with the exception of the first whereas, is almost exactly the same resolution that was brought before this body, one in the form of a proclamation 2 years ago and last year again. I want to point out very clearly, because I think people have been very confused about this, that if you read this resolution, you will see that there is no place in it that there is mention of Columbus and or Columbus Day. I was very deliberate in making sure that this is, as the integrity of it in celebrating and recognizing Indigenous peoples is what it is about. So just want to point that out, and thanks to the folks at the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee who were very encouraging in asking for us to revisit this resolution, and I hope that my colleagues here at this table can support it. I'll answer any other questions that I can.
Thanks very much, Leslin. Mike?
Yes, I'm going to support this resolution. I want to make it clear that this does not do what one of the speakers we heard tonight suggested. That was Ms. Colon. I think she was thinking about the resolution that was passed in the city, which actually replaced traditional Columbus Day with Indigenous People Day. The intention here is to have two celebrations on the second Monday of each year in October. And there will be Columbus Day and there will be Indigenous Peoples Day. And our documents will talk about both of them. There's nothing here that says that we're doing away with Columbus Day. If it said that, I would be not supportive. If a year from now somebody comes along with a resolution saying that now we've got Indigenous Peoples Day, now we get to do away with Columbus Day, I will oppose that. But I think this is fine to celebrate this. Indigenous people are, have been and are an important fact in our community. We're pleased to have them here. This is the same with all of our immigrants and other people that are here. They accepted us. And we accept them, and we want to them to understand that we that they matter to us. So that is why I'm supporting this.
Leslie? Thank you, Michael, for that. If I had the power to take away what is a national holiday, I would do so, but we don't have that power. Columbus Day is a national holiday. There are people who choose to celebrate it and people who choose not to celebrate it. Here in Tompkins County, what we're asking for is to recognize Indigenous Peoples Day as well, and in October, which is what has been asked of us by the Indigenous peoples in our community. And I'm not sure, even the resolutions that were passed by other municipalities saying that they're replacing the national holiday stands. We can't do that.
Thanks, Leslie. Anna?
I just want to acknowledge Leslie for her diligence and perseverance with this. I really appreciate that you've continued to bring this forward. I do feel very passionate about it as well. And want to acknowledge that I think that the Indigenous peoples of this area didn't as much accept us as much as didn't have a choice. And I think that it's really important to acknowledge their place and their history with this land. And I want to also acknowledge something that many marginalized populations experience, and it was noted by one of the speakers earlier, and I just want to reiterate it, which is the fact that the history that we learned, that I learned, that many of us learned in high school, is not the history that the Indigenous peoples of this community or the United States in general experienced. And the offense to all the children as they are raised in this country, seeing and experience and being taught a history that is not the true history that they experienced must be exceptionally painful over and over and over again, and an offense that keeps ringing over and over again. So this is a very small gesture to acknowledge that there is something to amend and there's amends to be made. So I just want to recognize that.
Rich and then Amanda.
I will support the resolution, and I really appreciate the work the committee has done to carefully craft the language. There's much to criticize about Christopher Columbus and his activities. With that said, he also serves as a symbol of a large immigrant group that was coming to our country and was really demonized and treated very poorly. And it's the creation of the Columbus Day was a recognition of immigrant rights and the addition they bring to our country, which is a lesson that I think we seem to have to learn over and over again. Tompkins County and the city of Ithaca certainly have a very strong Italian-American community, and I'm happy that the clarity is here that we are not saying anything about their history in coming to our country by creating Indigenous Peoples Day. And it certainly is a very good thing to recognize the Indigenous people and their history as well. Doing it side by side certainly will create the opportunity for some careful reflection and good conversation, I hope. But I think we have a better resolution than came from the city, which could easily be seen as very divisive. And with the intent that this is not divisive, I support it.
Amanda. Thank you, Leslyn, for bringing this forward, and I'm glad I'm sitting here and get to vote positively for this. I feel like, similarly to what Anna said, that this is one small step in repairing something that was broken. So I'm very happy about this. Thank you.
Are we ready to vote? Okay, all in favor of Resolution M, please raise your hands. That looks unanimous. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much, Leslyn. Thanks to WDIC, and thanks to the Budget Committee for bringing this to us.
I just want to say during the vote, they were waiting outside. I'm just going to run outside to see if the folks are waiting outside.
Okay.
Let them know.
All right. Sorry that they left. All right. I think if we can go through the consent agenda, we may sweep up a few people who are waiting for things, but then we'll also kind of juggle to see who else we can send on their way. No, you're welcome to stay. I just want you to know, but just in case you have somewhere else to be. So starting with, you said the AMPO, that's my report. Okay, there are no appointments tonight on the consent agenda. Resolution A, establishing standard work days for elected and appointed officials of Tompkins County, ID 7921. Suicide Prevention Coalition, Zero Suicide
off.
Initiative. We will take that off. Resolution C, authorization to accept grant and contract for substance abuse funds, Mental
off.
Health Department. Budget adjustment within the community services for the elderly program and budget transfer for the weatherization referral and packaging WRAP program, ID 7945. Resolution E, authorization to accept community engagement grant from the Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, Office for the Aging, ID 7942. Resolution F, budget adjustment related to acceptance of 2018 New York State Office of Children and Family Services funding, Youth Services, ID 7939. Resolution G, stepping up to reduce the number of children with reduce the number of people with mental illnesses in jails, Mental Health Department, ID 7948. Is there a motion for the consent agenda? Moved by Rich, seconded by Anna. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. So, Rich?
I was wondering if the chair might consider Resolution N, as Lee Shurtleff is going to be waiting a long time on that one.
Yes. Hi, Lee. Let me go to Shauna first. She's got a couple that I think people are waiting for. And then we'll go to Lee. And we'll go to, and then we're going to pick up Darby. Okay, Darby and Andrea. Right? And then nobody will be here when it's time for legislative privilege and Jason's report, but that's fine. Okay, Shauna.
Okay, I would like to, move to the floor resolution number B, Suicide Prevention Coalition Zero Suicide Initiative, ID 7950.
So second by Anna. And now you're moving the one that came out of committee. Okay, in everybody's red folders, there's a version with some changes suggested by Legislator Black. Let me just point out that committee chairs are asked to move whatever came out of their committee, and then when there are subsequent revisions, even if it comes from the committee chair, you can then address them after it's moved, but you should bring to the floor whatever came out of your committee. Okay, Shauna.
Yeah, I am proud to be a sponsor of this resolution. Specifically, I wanted to also thank Sharon McDougall on her hard work, as well as Scott McLeod, who's a representative from the SOPI Fund. I feel like the two of them have provided so much education in our community surrounding zero suicide, and this is really an initiative that I think as a county we should be proud of. We are going to be one of the first counties in New York State to implement zero suicide, and essentially what the initiative itself does is It's a new way of healthcare providers utilizing different tools in order to provide better care for people that are struggling with suicide. So as a county, I think we should be really proud that this is happening and that we're one of the front runners here.
Thank you, Shauna. And do you want to just point out that in the first resolve, you have a couple small changes in the fourth whereas?
Yes. The first resolved that Tompkins County hereby commits to, and we marked out signs onto, the zero suicide model to reduce the number of people committing suicides, commit to sharing lessons learned with other counties to support a statewide initiative, and encourage all health and behavioral health care partners to participate in the zero suicide model. Those were the corrections that were noted.
Okay, and just added, changed one word in the fourth whereas. So that is obviously friendly to you as the mover. Anna, friendly. Okay. Is there any discussion? May you vote? All in favor of Resolution B, please raise your hands. Opposed? All right. It's unanimous. Thank you very much. Thank you, Scott. And you've got Resolution
Thank you, Scott.
C. And Sean, you got C?
Yep, we have one more. The authorization, document ID 7947, authorization to accept grant and contract for substance abuse funds, mental health department. I would like to move.
Seconded by Leslin.
Great. For this, I believe there might have been some questions, and I was wondering if Frank or Sharon might be able to come up and explain this resolution a bit.
Hello, Frank, our Commissioner of Mental Health and Public Health.
Sharon left me, so you'll just have to deal with me. I'm sorry. So what's in front of you is some monies that were a member item in the state budget this last go-around. The Heroin Task Force members put forward some resources for 17 counties in New York. We happen to be one of them. Our total is $156,000. It is one-time funding, and it is designed for jail substance use disorder services. So when this money first came to be, there was this huge rush to move forward to get it spent because it has to be done in the state calendar year. As with most things that get rushed, when people started to think about it, it changed a little bit. And so essentially where we are in this process is we are going to be meeting next week with Ray Bunce and Brian, as well as our OASIS licensed providers, to talk about what services we would be able to provide with the funding. It is one-time funding. We have been told that it needs to at least be encumbered via contracting by March 31st, the entirety of the funds, that we can expect that it will be reappropriated into the following year, not meaning new funds, but that we would be able to continue to spend it into the second state fiscal year. So that's where it is, and why we brought it in front of you quickly, as we were trying to be responsive to being able to spend the monies. Likely what we're going to see is one of our local OASIS providers going to the jail and actually providing services there, both individual and group substance use services actually in the jail. So this is something we've been talking about wanting to do and have there. Amending the contract with one of those two entities, which we already have, is likely the quickest and most effective way for us to get things up and running quickly. So that's where we are today.
Thanks very much, Frank. Any questions for Frank or discussion? So I have two questions. You said member item. I thought we didn't have member items anymore.
Well, I'm sorry. Maybe I'm using the wrong terminology. That's how it was described to us by the Conference of Local Mental Hygiene Directors. So you'll have to take that up with them.
Jason, do you have something?
It's not member item money. There's no more member items. It's probably some strategically placed funding.
Okay.
Much better description.
It's STF? Is that SPF? Okay. Mike?
If it walks like a duck.
But we're glad for it. That's great.
Not argue about it.
Yeah.
Not arguing. So when you talked about the encumbering it by March 31st, but it could be spent through a longer period of time. So
Yeah, through the next year, they're telling us, is the guidance we're getting right now. It's kind of being looked at as a pilot, and we are being required to put measurements in place with whatever programming, and OASIS will need to approve both the plan as well as the provider we choose before we're able to go forward.
Okay, this is great news. This is terrific. And so maybe one time we'll turn into something more.
Sure. And one additional question I saw floating is it cannot supplant existing funding, so it has to be new additional services.
Great, thank you. Rich?
Would it be possible to use any of it for LEAD?
It needs to be in the jail is the direction that we're being given right now.
Okay.
All right, ready to vote on Resolution C? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Terrific. Good news. Thank you. Thank you, Shauna. What else came off of consent? Let's see. That was it? Okay. All right. What page is yours, Rich?
70.
Look at page 70. I'd like to move it.
I would move Resolution N, authorization to adjust the budget to transfer from the general fund balance an amount to fund the Department of Emergency Response Communication Equipment Renewal and Replacement Account, which has been funded by the statewide interoperable communications grant during fiscal year 2017.
Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion? Pretty self-explanatory. No hard questions for Lee. All right. This is a short form roll call.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Are there any no's? Okay, that's unanimous. Thank you very much. All right, thanks, Lee. Thank you for being here. Then I am pretty sure, Anna, you got some people waiting here.
I do. So I have Resolution J and Resolution K. So I'll start with Resolution J, adoption of Local Law Number B of 2018, a local law to modify Local Law Number 2 of 2015, a local law to establish a sustainable energy loan program in Tompkins County, ID 7917. I so move.
Seconded by Leslin. Discussion. Mike.
I have more of a question than a discussion. Has this program been effective? A lot of loans been made as it stands today?
I'm going to call one has. So my understanding is part of the reason for expanding what they have here is for exactly the reason that you mentioned. So they have enough data to understand what parameters would have the greatest impact, and this is an adjustment to address exactly that. Thanks for asking.
And while we're at it, I would like to make sure to introduce Andrea Aguirre, our new energy specialist, been here about 6 weeks or so. Andrea is the person working with what we call their energy navigator, but they're branding the program Business Yes for your energy savings. Okay. To work with businesses to, at especially early stages so that people can incorporate energy efficiency and renewable energy systems into their business expansions or new construction before it's too late, rather than kind of when you'd have to change all your plans, but really at the front end. And Andrea's position is supported by a state grant as well as county money and TCAD money as well. So welcome. We're delighted to have you. And have we introduced Darby as our – okay, well, everybody knows Darby, but maybe since – she hasn't been here as in this position as a senior planner with the Department of Planning and Sustainability. So thank you, Darby, for joining our staff. Had been in the town of Ulysses and the town of Ithaca, too, right? So wonderful. What? And the county. Of course. Duh. All right. Very good. Anything else on Resolution I? Okay, Jay. Jay. Any other discussion? All right. All in favor, please raise your hands. Opposed? That's unanimous.
All right, so the second half of this is Resolution K, authorizing an amended municipal agreement between Tompkins County and the Energy Improvement Corporation to implement and administer a sustainable energy loan program in Tompkins County. That's ID 7918. I so move.
Seconded by Leslin.
I just want to note for anybody who's listening, the Energy Improvement Corporation is the entity that we would work with in order to provide the loans necessary for PACE to do the energy improvements.
Okay, and in your red folder is an actual legibly printed attachment, these two attachments that came out kind of funny in your original packet. So that's, you've got that in your red folder.
And this describes the nature of the adjustment from PACE 1.0 to PACE 2.0.
Any other discussion? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. All right, great. Thank you very much. All right. What else are people waiting for?
Resolution P.
P. All right. Thank you, Dan. Packet page.
73.
Great. Okay. Thank you very much. Go ahead.
That's fine.
That's Shauna.
I would like to move Resolution P, Adoption of Youth Services Advisory Board Bylaws, ID 7940.
Second, Anna. All right. Any discussion? Yes, Shauna.
These have actually gone through committee, maybe two or three times, and glad to see them back. I think all of the corrections have been done. Correct myself. And if there are any questions, feel free to let me know.
Any discussion questions? Anna.
There was just one small typo that was amended just before this, which is switching in the terms, length of terms section. It says there are no term limits, and it's supposed to be there are no limits on number of terms. It's just a small change that we approved.
Okay. Any other discussion? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. All right. I'm going to say let's go to legislative privilege of the floor. All right? Would anybody like to? We'll sort of go back to the front page of your packet, legislative privilege. Really?
We almost.
Amanda and then Ann.
All right, well, I don't have anything pleasant to say tonight, but I have a couple of things I want to say. So I'm on the Water Resources Council, and we had a lovely discussion yesterday about HABs, harmful algal blooms. There's been about a dozen reports of suspicious blooms in the past couple of weeks, several of which are confirmed, and I believe we're still waiting results for some of the toxicity, like how toxic they are. The most recent one was at Bolton Point, just like a couple of days ago. There was a confirmed bloom at Teganic last week, and the beach was closed, and I believe it's open now. Yeah, they opened it yesterday or today. So obviously this affects the community, the water could be unsafe, and it also affects tourists who come to the Finger Lakes, and people should definitely call ahead to parks if you're going there to check. The website is not necessarily up to date, so you should definitely call. The Community Science Institute here does the bloom testing, and they do kind of the quick, rapid short-term testing. The DEC also does testing, but that is a longer process, and it takes several weeks, and they have a lot more specifics, but that takes several weeks to get those results back. So the CSI, Community Science Institute, you can, if you're out boating or swimming, you can report a suspicious bloom to them at habshotline@gmail.com. However, I got an email this morning that CSI has lost its funding from Park Foundation for this quarter and is in emergency need of funding to continue their ability to do this testing. without immediate funding, CSI will have to freeze their work on their samples, effectively cutting off our local information source for any HABs that are happening. Apparently, they've contacted several organizations, including the planning department, to try to get some funds to do this. Along those lines, the DEC released its HABs action plan about a month ago, and like I said, we had a really good report at the Water Resources Council, and I think we can get that emailed to everybody. You can also just search Google DEC HABs action plan for Cayuga Lake. So that's one thing. Secondly, I yesterday looked at the definition of treason. And according to Merriam-Webster, treason is helping your country's enemies during war. We are not at war with Russia, but our intelligence agencies have been investigating and have found evidence to prove that Russia attacked us during our elections. This is an act of aggression, and it aims to undermine the essence of our democracy. Russia has denied this. But yesterday, for Donald Trump to state to the world that he believes and trusts an enemy, a foreign government, more than he believes and trusts his own people and intelligence agencies is shocking to me, and I believe it's an act of treason. He has sided with our attacker. I don't think anyone could name any president in our history who has sided with someone who attacked us, and this is absolutely unacceptable and unprecedented, and I am thoroughly disgusted by his statements, and I am more afraid than ever for our democracy. Thank you.
Thank you, Amanda. Anne?
I'm just trying to breathe after having all that in my head again. So on a totally different topic, I have some family in town, and I just want to say we spent a very nice time visiting some local places, and there was Bronco Cat Rescue out of the town of Ulysses has opened up a new cat cafe in Ithaca, and if you haven't been there, it is a nice break from some of the craziness that's going on in the world. And so I'm allergic to cats, which is why we only have... Wait, that's not the funny part, which is why we only have two of them at home. But I was able to bring my niece there and do my paperwork and get ready for meetings, and so, and they have really good coffee and food. So I just, and it's within walking distance here. It's where the old shop used to be, around the corner from CTB. So I encourage everybody to go check it out. And almost all of the cats are up for adoption to there. And last year we got one of our cats from Brown Coat Cat Rescue. So I just wanted to say that.
Thank you, Ann. Leslie.
So, that's funny. I want to just say a quick congratulations to the Ithaca Asian American Association for another extremely successful Finger Lakes International Dragon Boat Festival. We had a big discussion a few meetings ago about room tax and room tax monies, and you know, people are talking about the arts and all of those things. This is one festival that out of 23 to 27 teams, many of them came from elsewhere, not the United States of America, not Ithaca, and really loved being in our community. These are teams that bring probably about 40 people each, and they had to find housing and they had to stay and they practice. They come here for a period of time so they can, you know, get some practicing in, then participate in the festival, stay and hang out. I had the honor and privilege, not to me, but all of us at GIAC, of hosting for dinner and to hang out with us. A youth team that came all the way from Trinidad and Tobago. What a privilege it was to see for our community this large group of young black children all the way from a small Caribbean island coming here to participate in the festival and enjoying all that Ithaca had to offer in Tompkins County. It was interesting to hear them say, having been in New York City, because they flew into New York City and was there for an overnight, how much they appreciated the niceness, the greenery. They spoke about so much about this community, the friendliness, so much about being here in Ithaca, and would love to come back again. So again, kudos to the Dragon Boat Festival organizers, the people who decided to have it in the first place, and to all the teams that came. I think that one of the teams from Toronto won, and one of our local novice team called Seaduction also won in the novice division. But kudos to them for another very successful festival held at Tagaanik State Park this time around, I think because Cayuga Lake, with all the funky stuff you were talking about, won't allow for it to happen there. So I just wanted to give them a big shout out.
Thanks, Leslyn. And there have been some years in the past when we had a county team, a county boat, you know,
Somebody stole our dragon. We had a dragon. We won the dragon.
Raced the city boat. And, you know, if anybody wants to think about it.
Oh, yeah. We beat the city mercilessly. Yeah. And then somebody stole our dragon because we won a dragon, a stuffed dragon.
So, Jason, along with being a goalie, is that by any chance one of your hidden talents?
Well, thank you, Martha, but I would encourage participating. Thanks, Martha. I would encourage us participating again. It was just really lovely.
Absolutely.
Seriously, do they still have community boats? They didn't?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Let's do it.
All right. Let's see. Okay. All right. We need a gauntlet to throw down, right? Okay. Anna, then Mike.
I just wanted to add the list of events. As everybody knows, annually there's the Women's Swimming event for Hospicare. I will be repeating this announcement in 2 weeks, which will be 3 days or 4 days before the announcement. This is one of the most amazing events I've ever taken part in. This is my 7th year. If anybody does want to donate, I am shamelessly asking for any support. Or you can just go to their website at, if you type in womenswimming.org, you can also donate directly to Hospicare. The reason I mention it is that every year they raise about $400,000. All of that money goes directly to the services they provide. So anyone who needs services in this community or support in a very important transition in our lives, the end stage of our lives, Hospicare is there. I hear nothing consistently about good experiences over and over and over and over again. And the reason I am bringing it up specifically is that right now they have only raised $161,000 and the goal in 23 days will be $408,000. So please consider donating to them. It's worth it. And if you want to enjoy the festivities and cheer us all on at 7 o'clock in the morning on August 11th, I encourage it. If not, 9 o'clock in the morning is the breakfast. Ithaca Bakery does donate an entire breakfast. There's the aardvarks usually do a band. I don't know if they're doing it this year, but I hope so. It is a lot of fun, so please do join if you are up and want to see the sunrise. Well, and you'd be there at 6. So.
Are you swimming this year?
I am swimming my 7th year, and I would like to say that I am scared of water that I can't see the bottom of. This is a childhood fear of mine. I used to think there were sharks in all water. So the first year was to try and overcome that fear, and the event was so phenomenal. I've continued to do it every year, but I swim pretty much once a year, get in the water and swim across the lake, and I swim extremely quickly to race the sharks to the other side. So.
Thank you for doing it.
Thanks. Mike, and then back to Leslyn.
Now I feel bad. I was going to tell you, you know, the Loch Ness Monster's sister reportedly.
I met her last year. I swam across, like, faster than she did.
This is the rumor.
Thanks.
My question is actually, this is just a point of clarification, Martha, because you had mentioned earlier, something caught my ear, that yourself and a couple of the legislators were going to Albany tomorrow to meet with the PSC and with NYSEG. But you'd also mentioned Ray Slaughter was going. I'm now, if I say anything wrong.
No, Ken.
Ray Slaughter?
Ken.
Ken Slaughter.
Okay, that answers my question.
That'd be interesting.
If we have to take a powerhouse attorney with us?
I
don't think we need any defense yet. Leslie and then Mike.
I know, Martha, the way you've been going up there today, we might send an attorney. Anyhow, let me go quickly because we're running out of time. Thank you for giving me a second bite of the apple because I did forget. Anna, thank you for swimming again. Our former colleague, Kathy Luz Herrera, also swam for many, many years with Women Swimming and would raise funds for hospice care, and you rightfully describe how wonderful they are. I also want to mention this weekend there are two other great festivals happening in Tompkins County. There's Grassroots.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Music festival, another large event here. And then Ithaca's inaugural one-minute play festival. I'm in it. You got to come see it. At the Kitchen Theater Saturday and Sunday, and they are literally one-minute plays. It's an hour long. You have a minute to tell your story and get off. So please do support the arts, support the Kitchen Theater, support our local writers who wrote these plays for our inaugural one-minute play festival.
Sounds wonderful.
And support Grassroots.
Thank you, Leslie. Mike Lane.
The news about the coming closure of the Vanguard printing factory in the town of Dryden comes on the top of the loss of the jobs from the high-speed checkware that moved from our community without notice. Vanguard apparently has said it's going to close down in August, pretty much without notice. What surprises me the most is having talked to our Economic Development Agency, TCAD folks, and said, what did you know about the closing of these two? And frankly, they didn't know a lot other than they knew nothing about high speed when that happened. They knew only that times were getting bad for businesses like Vanguard that publish print materials such as calendars or programs and those kinds of things. What does it mean? It means 250 people are not going to have good quality manufacturing jobs in Tompkins County. And you can look at the state figures about how wonderful our unemployment is, our unemployment figures are. You can look at how many jobs we're creating, but I'll trade you a manufacturing job any day for a hotel service job. We've got to think about what we're doing, not only in retaining businesses, but also attracting businesses here. We have to grow our own. That's a huge part of the mix. But we also have to think about what's happening out there and are there small businesses that could come to Tompkins County and would like to be here. We continue to try to improve our transportation, and that's important because a lot of folks want to live here. We're trying to do something about housing. There's no doubt that the lack of housing here hurts us for people that want to come in, whether it's coming into Cornell or Ithaca College or some of the technology businesses here. They look at us, and if they can't find affordable housing for their families, they don't want to come. And they need jobs for the trailing spouses very often. We don't do a very good job trying to find those kinds of jobs. I would like to see us really start to think about this seriously, and how we can improve economic development. Everyone, we're all in favor of economic development, no question about it. But what are some successful things that really happen, and how can we keep jobs here and make better jobs for people? Thanks.
Thank you, Mike. Anyone else? Okay, thank you all very much. A couple things from my report. First, Amanda, thank you for, especially for both the things that you said. I officially apologize to anybody and everybody I groused at yesterday because I was just baseline so upset. Absolutely. You said it extremely well. And this is not a partisan issue. It's absolutely not a partisan issue. As we heard from many of the voices on the media last night and today. And usually when there's a crisis, we turn to the president. So this is a problem. On the Habs issue, can you give us a brief, like, what can be done about these blooms? And when you say, like, it's cleared up, it's organic, and the beach is open, is it just, like...
So there's different levels of toxicity. So if somebody sees something that looks like a blue-green algae bloom, they can report it. This institute, the CSI, does, like, rapid testing. And the idea is that they can see how toxic it is, you know, just some very basic measurements, and then they can let the park or the area or whatever know that, like, yeah, you need to close your beach or you can't let people boat here or whatever. What can we do? I mean, that's the question. You know, I mean, so the DEC has put this report out, and while there's a lot of really great ideas in there's not a lot of specifics. It's like, let's monitor and research, and they put a lot of the onus on the Soil and Water Conservation District, and it's sort of starting to look a little bit like an unfunded mandate. Like, yeah, they need to do this, this, and this. Yeah,
there's money.
Well, there is money.
There is money, but it's not adequate, and they've made it clear that soil and water is supposed to be the boots on the ground in the battle against HAZ.
Right. Yeah.
And how much is CSI, have they lost from Park Foundation?
I don't know.
You don't know, okay.
But so some of the things that we talked about about the report, there are indicators, like people are doing research, and there are indicators like increased phosphorus in your water or the mussels or the fetch length. I learned about fetch length of the lake, you know, which is how far the wind can blow across the lake. And the longer that is, apparently, the more likely you are to have a HAB. So there are indicators. Nobody really knows, like, exactly why they happen. It's sort of a mystery. But the other thing to note is that once your lake gets a HAB, it's more likely to have more, and they're harder to get rid of. So that's a long answer.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thanks very much. Jonathan, did you have your hand up?
No, I didn't. Oh. Although I will say I live on the lake, and the thing about them is they are spectacularly obvious. I mean, it's not like you need testing to see. I mean, what they consist of and how they could be avoided is something, but you can't miss them. And they're very defined, too. They come and they go, and they're very clear where they begin and where they end. I haven't seen them this year. There were several last year, but they come and they go. But they're really obvious. You can't miss them.
Okay. Okay, so I got Mike and Ann and then Anna.
I had a question about CSI. I guess, do they contract out with the DEC, or how? I guess I don't understand kind of what their role is.
I'm not the authority, and I'm still new to learning about it, but I think that they are an independent organization that does testing. They then send, or anybody can send something to DEC, but I understand they do a more in-depth analysis to really see what's going on, and then they report back, and that takes a long time. And the point of CSI is that they can do this sort of rapid testing, so then they can let people know within a couple of days, like, yeah, you have something toxic. Whereas if you have to wait for DEC, a couple of weeks later, the HAB might be gone, you know? So, yeah.
So you mean like there's a period before it's visible? Is that what you're saying?
No.
No, okay.
But I'm not an expert.
Yeah, and CSI is a nonprofit. They use a lot of volunteer work. They do a lot of stream monitoring. I think we contract with them for a little bit. I think they put a bunch of revenue streams together. And then Anna?
I just also wanted to add that so not only for the algae blooms is it it's dangerous to go swimming. You can have a physical reaction to it, and it's not only dangerous for people, but it's dangerous for pets also. And if you're getting your drinking water from the lake, and if there's a bloom and it's rated, or if it's designated as it's creating toxic chemicals into the water, then you can't drink the water. Also, if you're getting water out of it. So it's pretty serious.
Anna?
Just a question for Amanda or Deborah. Last year, the HABs, and there's a picture of it, and there's a whole page on the Department of Health website about HABs, for anybody listening, and it was the yellow sprinkle. It looked like yellow dots all over the water, surface of the water. There's actually a picture of it on their website. But what I'm seeing this year, and maybe some of the people have confirmed it, I have a picture right here that I'm trying to find on the website or online, but it is these brown, slimy globules, and if you hit them, they do break up like spores, and it's all over the coastline, and then it will disappear, and then it'll come back 3 days later, just like what you're describing, but looks completely different. When you swim through it, it literally is like a ball of slime that you're swimming through. So do we have any pictures? Did they show any pictures of what the new ones look like?
The report does not, the DEC report does not, what I saw didn't show pictures. CSI, you can send them a picture. You can send them to HABSHotline@gmail.com, and they'll look at your pictures.
HABSHotline?
HABSHotline@gmail.com. And CSI has a really good website, and there's lots of information. They have a map, an interactive map. You can go and see, locate the points on the lake that there have been blooms.
So that's Community Science Institute. Thanks very much, Amanda. A couple other quick things. I got a call today from the governor's office. They have filed a lawsuit against the federal government on the salt, part of the tax, the state and local tax issue with the new tax tax bill. I can't say reform. So the tax bill. So they filed a lawsuit with Maryland, New Jersey, and Connecticut. At TCOG, we've talked a little bit about, are any of the municipalities doing anything with setting up the nonprofit where you can put your taxes instead? And it seems like nobody is doing that because, it's looking like the federal IRS is going to say that it's not legal anyway. So it seems like it's complicated. Doesn't look like anybody's going to be doing it. Jason, did you want to say?
I believe the city set up a mechanism to start this. I think they did pass a resolution to if anybody wanted to take the opportunity to do that. I believe the city did do that.
Okay.
But that's the only one I'm aware of in the Tompkins County.
Okay. You probably saw the notice that we're going to have air service to Charlotte, North Carolina, starting in December, starting on Saturdays, one flight back and forth. And if we use it enough, then they propose we'll get more flights starting early in 2019. So I told Mike Hall he's doing so much winning. It's great. So really, three cheers for our airport. And I've already talked to you about the Albany trip tomorrow. So the last thing is just that I would like to appoint to the Ithaca Metropolitan Planning Organization Policy Committee Deborah Dawson to be our representative. So that does it for my report.
Alternate representative.
I didn't write that down. Alternate. Sorry, Mike is the representative. Any questions, anything else from my report? Thank you very much. Jason Molino, County Administrator. Here.
report.
Thank you. I have two things to report. One, last week, New York State Comptroller came out with the 2019 tax cap official numbers. It was the highest it's been since 2013. The law came into effect in 2012. It is a 2% allowable growth. While this, the comptroller identifies that this will most likely bring in additional municipal revenue, cautiously warns folks to remember that you have fixed costs that will most likely rise, and that this may be, unfortunately, offset by potential cuts in, well, only mentioned federal funding. I would throw in there state funding as well. But it just from a point of reference was more than we estimated with our budget retreat. So. The tax cap will most likely be larger than what we projected, which can only be good things in terms of rollover into future years when it's not as much, assuming we don't use the whole tax cap. I wanted to just make you aware of that. So we do have the 2019 numbers. Climate survey, we will be conferencing, Amy Hendricks and I will be conferencing tomorrow with Kaleidoscope to get the preliminary results, review that with them, talk a little bit about it. I believe in August we have a first set of meetings set up with the implementation team, and then followed by rollout into the departments into September, October, so on and so forth. So there'll be more to follow with that. That's all I have for an update.
And we were going to – the implementation team will be talking with you, figure out how that comes to the legislature as well.
I think one of the things we'll be doing after tomorrow is really firm up the timeline, how it involves the legislature, having some meetings with the legislature and department heads, their involvement in the updates. It probably, you know, a lot of the rollout won't happen until September because the next 6 weeks are budget focused right now. Mm-hmm. Once the budget's released, then I'll have more time. I know I'll be intricately involved in briefing departments and so on and so forth. So I think after tomorrow we'll have more of an update from the next legislative meeting.
Okay. Good. Thank you, Jason. Dan.
I just wanted to clarify, did you say the tax cap is 2% for Tompkins County?
2% for counties. 2% for 2019.
For Tompkins County?
Yes.
Specific?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
So they do a global general cap, and then ours gets modified.
Right. You have the ability to levy up to the tax cap levy is 2%. So in our past years, the levy has been below 2%. Remember, there's an either or. Whichever is lowest, it's either inflation or whatever growth factor they put in there. So for fiscal years that are on a calendar year for 2019, which is us, you have up to a 2% tax cap.
So I'm sorry, it's just because there's a number that the state uses and then each county does all its adjustments to it. Is Tompkins County number 2%?
Okay. So for this specific, for the element about the tax cap, it's 2%. Then we have a series of other corrections that go into that calculation. Has to do with omitted taxes, has to do with sales tax credits, all that type of thing. Then we'll get our final number. I'm sorry. So the growth factor is 2%. My apologies. Yep.
Thanks.
Yeah. There's, obviously, it's not that simple. There's a lot of other elements that go into that tax cap calculation, but for the growth factor that we get from the state is 2%.
And that's higher than what?
It's higher than what we projected in the April retreat, and it is the highest it has been since 2013.
But that's not just Tompkins, it's all counties.
Yes.
Get that base.
It's all calendar year fiscal years for 2019.
Got it. There will be a quiz later. All right. Were there any other questions for Jason? I would like to juggle a little bit more and ask Dan Klein, Chair of Government Operations, to pick up resolutions H and I. Would you like to do that?
Sure. I'd like to move Resolution H, Budget Appropriation and Adjustment, County Administrator Moving Expenses.
Seconded by Mike Lane. And I would point out in your red folder is a change just to the title that I suggested, because this isn't specifically an appropriation for the contingent fund. That affects how we vote, for one thing. But if that's friendly,
yes.
Be okay. Mike, that's okay?
Yes.
Okay. So, discussion on this. Anybody under? This is a big deal. Dan, why don't you introduce it a bit? Or Mike, whichever, whoever.
Dan can go, and then I'll speak.
I'm trying to think why it's a big deal. This is a policy we have for department
heads. Oh, I'm sorry. The next one's, it's a big deal to Jason's moving.
Big deal to me, yeah.
This is a policy we have.
We're really glad Jason's moving. No, I was thinking... Is the next one I was thinking was
okay.
A big deal, but go ahead.
Well, just, we have a policy for department heads and administrators to pay their moving expenses if they move from out of county. So that's what this is.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to, you know. Okay. Mike Lane?
Dan Sevitt.
No, okay. All right. This is short form roll call. Any other discussion? Okay.
Mr. Maury?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Are there any no's? If there are, Jason, we'll see you later. go ahead, Dan, on the next one, which is a big deal.
Bigger deal, yes. I'd like to move a resolution I, appropriation from contingent fund and creation of position county administration.
Seconded by Mike Lane. And there is, again, something in your red folder where just the fringe amount is corrected. Kathy, is that the only?
Yes.
That's why the total is different also?
Correct.
Okay.
So as part of the budget process last year, we approved the creation of a new deputy administrator position, and we put some money in the contingent fund for it. This will move the money out of the contingent fund to actually implement the position, and I think beyond that, Jason should say some things.
Jason?
Sure, I can speak now. I guess I'll start off with... You know, in March, when we advertised for the deputy administrator position, I had requested that the legislature, from the legislature, that I would fill one position with the expectation to kind of observe and see how things go. Over that period of time, which has been about 5 or 6 months, I've had the ability to see the demands of the department, to see the demands on the organization, and have really started, had some key conversations with some of the leadership team, some of the other department heads, some of you, to get an understanding of expectations moving forward, and really saw that there is a demand for the other position and how that can best be filled and how best can be utilized. I've had a little bit of a focus since the onset with someone helping and assisting with the performance of the organization, and haven't quite seen that fit where I think it can fit under this second deputy position. So that discussion and thought process has happened since I've advertised for the position. We had a great pool of candidates, 45 candidates had applied for the position, at least ones that qualified. There might have been more that didn't qualify. And as we went through a selection process, which, as you know, were very thorough, you all had a great participation. I do appreciate all your feedback about the candidates that you met. And had a great interview team who I'd like to specially thank that participated in this with me, and had really some very, I thought, honest dialogue. Arel, Kit Kephart, Pat Buchel, Frank Krupa, Greg Potter, Amy Guerrieri, Jonathan Wood, Mike Hall, and Michael Woody, our talent acquisition manager, all participated as an interview team along with me. It really gave some good feedback on the candidates. So going through that process felt really positive. That we had some quality talent there, and that's what's brought forward the request for the second deputy position. It was not my intent initially, and it took a lot of hard thinking and thought processes of what can best serve the organization position-wise, and came to the conclusion of the deputy with some focus on performance in the organization as that key role. So that's what's in front of you today, requesting that we transfer those funds from the contingent fund that was budgeted for with the 2018 budget, so we can move forward and fill those positions.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
Discussion? Well, I want to say when we thought about this second position last year, in some ways we realized this is really, we'd really been way overdue in funding a second deputy. And now Jason's been here, 5 months without any deputy. It's really been impressive, Jason, with how you've handled this kind of workload. As a new person into town, a new person to our organization, without that kind of backup, you know, right at hand. With our department heads being hugely supportive, in my view, but it really, you really need two deputies. So I feel like this is long overdue, and I'm very glad myself to support it. Any other discussion? Ready to vote? All right. Short form roll call.
Mr. Maury?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Are there any no's? Lesson as a no. That passes 13-1. All right. Thank you.
If it's all right with you, I'd like to just talk about the folks I'd like to appoint. Sorry with you?
Absolutely.
So as we went through this process, it was a very thorough process, had multiple different levels to it, had a written component, interview component, several interview components. And as we went through it, we saw that we really had some excellent talent in the organization that had applied. I did not expect that to be the case, but was very glad that we had that as the case. And as we went through the process, it became very obvious that there was some talent here that we wanted to help lead in the organization. It also just so happened to be that that they fit the roles that we had identified as what was important in terms of the two deputy positions. I would like to say, though, that your continuous support from the legislature has been very helpful, having the support from the elected body to move forward with this, knowing that you feel there's an important need, and seeing that need has been, a key piece to making this work. So I'm greatly appreciative of all your support through all of this. As we went through the process, it was very obvious that these two candidates rose to the top from what they've done here in the organization and their backgrounds, their education, their talent that they bring to the table. And I'm proud to announce that both Amy Hendricks and Lisa Holmes will now be the two new deputy county administrators in the organization. We are currently working both of them on transition plans. So when I come back to the office on Thursday, I've been out for the past week or so, thankfully moving. I appreciate the reimbursement. And we're going to work on some transition plans for each of them, both in different both departments are in different situations, so we're going to work together to outline those transition plans as when they can start fully in the roles, and then I'll relay that on to the legislature when we've had some time to talk that over, and we'll be off and running. So thank you. And also, I would note that, the director searches, as I talk about those transition plans with them, I'll also work with them, as well as Amy Guerrieri, as to how we set up the director searches and move forward with those so that we can move as promptly as we can.
Jason, thank you very much. Amy and Lisa, welcome to administration. We look forward to working even closer with you both. I think that you both really represent great connections to our community and strong relationships within county government, within your staffs and the other departments. So this feels like a really natural move from our point of view, and we're really excited about what this means for the organization. So thank you both for taking on this challenge. I think Jason probably hasn't told you that you're sitting on each other's laps on the third floor up there. There's that much space. There's maybe space for one chair. So that's another part of transition is figuring out where everybody goes. So, again, thank you so very much for taking this on. Welcome. With that, Leslie.
Thank you. I was looking for my little WDIC magnet here that talks about diversity and inclusion and what we define them as. And so inclusion in particular, which is what WDIC has focused on, has been mainly about helping and supporting employees to reach their fullest potential within an organization. This is an example of that, and so I do want to congratulate you on your choice of these two fine women to be deputy county administrators, because it is demonstrative of what we have been preaching from an inclusion perspective and what we hope to see more of within the organization. We've got to work on the diversity part, but definitely the inclusion part is what we need to be doing more of. So thank you very much, and congratulations, ladies.
Anybody else? All right, you can hug him while we have a recess. We're going to take a 10-minute recess. Thank you all so very much. We're back in order, and I think we're up to Jonathan, County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
Okay, just a brief report. Just wanted to let everybody know both projects on the airport are continuing. The bids for the airport construction are out already. And on the DOT, Mike and I have been meeting with the state weekly, or at least conferencing with the state weekly, and I expect by next week
they'll have their people on the site doing environmental testing. So both are moving forward as quickly as we could hope. And that's my report.
That's light speed. That's fantastic. Questions for Jonathan?
It's a long report, Jonathan.
You can take a nap now.
I've been preparing.
In the recess, I said he was up next. So thank you very much, Jonathan. Rick Snyder, we understand you have a brief presentation about the audit.
Yep.
Okay. Finance Director Rick Snyder.
If we could have the screens lowered, please.
Yep. And you all have documents on your desk, I take it?
While they're coming down, I wanted to thank my staff, Donna Shaw, and all those who have worked on the on the finance report.
Rick, we can't hear you.
Mike, get up to the mic. Can't hear you.
Oh, because of that. Okay.
Got it.
It's done. Over.
Me, huh?
I would take Heath bar myself.
I'm going to be reading.
Okay. I want to thank Donna Shaw, who's the Director of Accounting Services, for helping me over the last 7 months to close the year and do our audit. As you know, this seven-month process takes a lot out of our staff, but I did want to give her honorable mention because she works just as hard as I do on preparing the financial statements and working with our auditors. Before I get into the slides, I wanted to give you a few brief remarks on the Budget Committee and how they served as our audit committee just last week, in fact, on Tuesday, receiving the report from the auditors. Their report is quite a bit different than ours. I don't know whose is better, but they talk about a lot about the legal representations they have to make as an audit firm. The report is being supplied to the legislative clerk so that legally we have a copy of the report on file. I've emailed electronic copies of the financial report to all the legislators so that you would have them about a week ahead of this meeting so you could read all, I don't know how many pages, of the documents that I've sent forth. I don't expect you to keep all these documents. You may if you want to. You can read them, keep them all. There's probably three booklets that were placed at your seat before the meeting tonight with two audit letters on top of that. The audit committee did go over most of this information, or I should say the budget committee, which was quite a bit different than previous years. We used to have an audit committee that was just made up of two or three people, plus the county administrator and myself. This year, the budget committee decided all of them would be on the audit committee, and that worked out really good. That was a good suggestion, Mike. I appreciate that. We had a good meeting last week. There were good questions raised, and the auditors made a very good formal presentation. They look at things a lot differently when they look at the county as a whole. My report tonight is looking at the things that interest you most, because you are always asking questions about some topics that come up all the time, like sales tax, and we concentrate mostly on the general fund instead of looking at countywide financial statements. So, no, I won't be boring you with GASB 45 or GASB 35, any of those things. I might find out as we go through the entire series tonight that if there's more information that you really want to get to know the county's financial operations, there's two parts in the main book, or one part in the main book and one in the executive summary. The executive summary I use a lot for a lot of projects because it gives multiple years of data. So if you ever want to look at the general fund with multiple years of data, that's an excellent resource. The management discussion and analysis is in the front of the big book or the financial report. In that management discussion and analysis, or MD&A, you'll see graphs and summaries and highlights of the year, and that's also a good place for you to start to read. If you're only going to read a bit, those would be the two sections that I've asked you to read. And the the other, all of these documents, especially the audited financial report, is going to be made available on the county's website, as we always do. And with that, I'll get started with the I did thank my staff, but I wanted to thank the Budget Committee for doing an excellent job. And if you do not want to take all those hard copies along with you tonight, just return them to me. You can put them on the table behind me at the end of the meeting if you don't wish to take them with you, and I'll take them back to the office. So I didn't want you to not know what to do with all those documents if you didn't want to keep all those dead trees. Okay. I've tried to give some highlights here, and I'll start with two that the auditors have also introduced when they introduced a report last Tuesday when they gave it to the Budget Committee. The first and most important bullet says that we have an unmodified opinion. It used to be called an unqualified opinion, but this is the highest ranking or the best opinion that you can get from an auditing firm. It means they found nothing exceptional that would detract from them giving us a clean opinion. So that's referenced in page one of the financial report, where you can see how the county received an unmodified opinion. The second bullet point is on page 77 of that big book document, and it says no material instances of noncompliance and no material internal control weaknesses were found. So that's another key letter that they place in their report to let everyone know that according to government auditing standards, the county was placed in that category, and we're very proud of that. There are numerous federal awards that are enumerated in what we call the single audit. The single audit is part of that big book financial report, and if you want to see what the single audit looks at, it's basically all our federal awards. And for a complete listing of all our federal awards, you can find those on page 84 of the report, which is like almost near the back, next to last page or so. And on those pages, you'll see all the federal award programs. And those federal award programs total $22,400,000. So that pretty much tells you the grants that we've got from the federal government in that single audit. And then the third bullet point here talks a little bit about our sales tax. Sales tax came in $1.8 million over budget, and that explains the bullet point right above it. We had an increase of $4 million in the general fund with a fund balance, total fund balance of $44.9 million. Of that $44.9 million, $38.8 million is what we call unassigned or undesignated fund balance. The next two bullet points pretty much explains how we came up with $4 million. And that sales tax came in $1.8 million over budget, and casino revenue came in $1.7 million over budget. You add those two together, and you're at $3.5 million. And so that's pretty much, in a nutshell, how well we did in just the general fund. Sales tax. When you think of how oftentimes we've said there's such great variations in the sales tax, and every month is up or down, and it goes all over the place, and I've made those remarks, and we've had graphs where we've shown quarter after quarter after quarter, and there's great fluctuation, and there's a great variation. But yet when you look at the last 7 years of sales tax actuals, with the exception of right here where we had our highest year in 2014, and over here in 2016 where we've had one of the weaker years, if you take into consideration that they almost balance out, you could almost draw a straight line of the rate of increase in our sales tax. So I don't want to oversimplify the discussion, but sometimes we say two things and they're both true. There's great variation and great fluctuation in our sales tax. But at the same time, when you look at this for budgeting purposes, you can see that you could pretty much draw a straight line right up here. And 2018 is what I've projected here at this point. This small number here for 2018 projection is what we actually have in a budget document. So we have about a $35 million budget for sales tax, 35.9, and that's what I've tried to show here. That red block up above there is what I've projected what we're going to actually come in at the end of the year, that 35.9. Now, how did I come up with $1.69 million more than what's in our budget? I've simply taken our actual proceeds from January to May, and those have been good months. We've had some great increases, 4%. And then for the rest of the year, from June all the way to the end of the year, I kept them exactly flat. I plugged in exactly flat what we did last year. No increase. We know that's going to be low. But in order to finish this graph and give you an idea of a very conservative projection for 2018, the projection is going to be about 35.9 at least, because that's keeping the last 7 months totally flat. So I think I haven't gone too far from being apart from what Jason showed you just a couple months ago, you know, what we were going to be doing in putting the formal budget together for next year. You know, we're going to be looking at that same kind of conservative estimate. And the only other thing is that we probably have another month, at least a month or two, that we can add before we finalize this projection. So sales tax here has been pretty positive for the county. This next section here talks about net position. And when we talk about net position, we're looking, as the auditors look at the county as a whole. We normally look at things in the funds where they belong, like the general fund, the airport fund, solid waste fund, all these, the capital projects funds. That's how we do business, and that's how legislators come to know our operating departments and what funds that they're in. The auditors look at it differently. They roll everything up into one big ball. And when you look at the county's net position, that's basically all the county's assets across the board minus all the county's liabilities. And that's what they call net position. And in this particular case for this year, our net position has decreased by $11.7 million, from $151.6 million to $139.9. Why did it go down? Well, it's gone down the last couple of years. Some years it goes up and some years it goes down. In both these instances, it had nothing to do with operations, had nothing to do with fiscal constraints or whether our revenues were good or whether one fund outperformed another or whether our expenditures are getting out of hand. The two reasons that when you roll up all the funds is that there was decreases in the equity interest in joint ventures. That's a complicated way of saying our portion of what we own of TC3 and our portion what we own of TCAT went down because their net position went down. Why would their position go down? That's our equity interest, as we're shareholders in those two operations. Why would our interest go down? Well, a number of reasons that could happen. They could take on more debt, or they could have a whole lot of depreciation on their fixed assets, depreciation that far exceeded the amount of additions to their fixed assets. So there's a number of different reasons on why their total equity might have gone down. And, of course, because we are partners with them and we show them in our financial statements as joint ventures, when their equity goes down, our equity goes down. So that answers number one. The second big one was changes in the county's share of pension obligations and other post-employment benefits liabilities. That basically is our cost of retirees' health insurance. So there's very extensive footnotes in the financial statements that show how the auditors calculate both our pension liability and our OPEB cost. OPEB is other post-employment benefit costs. We have an actuary that produces a report for us that the auditors get. that report our other post-employment benefits or retiree health care costs, and it projects it out for 30 years. And we have to show in our financial statements a liability that shows a portion of those post-employment benefit liabilities. In the same manner, the state puts forth its numbers on the entire retirement system of which we belong to, the New York State Retirement. There is now a new footnote. It's about 8 pages long in the financial statements that shows how our auditors calculate our portion of the New York State Pension Fund. So when our portion of the New York State Pension Fund goes up a lot, it's going to make our net position go down. And that's exactly what's happened with this final bullet point on this slide, is that our share of pension obligations and our share of post-employment benefit liabilities have both gone up. So these were two big decreases in 1 year, and that's what caused our net position to go down. This is a different but similar slide, in that part of our equity is what we call fixed assets or capital assets. You're probably familiar with this in looking at notes in our financial statements before, where you see land and buildings and construction, work in progress, equipment. You'll see all our fixed assets, and you'll see what we added during the year and what we deleted or disposed of, and you'll even see the depreciation for those fixed assets. Well, I've just showed the last 5 years, so you can see how that we've invested $11 million, that's this final year over here, in capital assets during 2017. It's not one of our higher years, but it's certainly not, it's not a bad year. So that's how much you, the legislators, have invested in roads, buildings, bridges, et cetera, all those things that aren't part of operating expenditures. In this slide, and I wanted to tell you how I came up with the ideas for what slides to show you tonight. And I wanted to come up with about 12 slides because I knew Leslin wanted me to do 12 one-minute plays. And so just think of this, Leslin, as 12
Gatsby
one-minute plays.
Gatsby 1 to Gatsby 45.
Maybe the last one will be a musical. I'm not sure yet. But I put these together because these come from questions that you have asked me at the end of prior year's reports, things that you were concerned about and you asked me. We've already covered sales tax. We're going to talk more about general fund, fund balance. And this was a question, I think it was Mike or a number of legislators that have asked in previous years, what is our percentage of debt limit? That's come up from time to time, and the auditors help us calculate that. And because you're allowed there's a formula put out by the state that's the maximum amount of what you could borrow. And then we try to measure and benchmark ourselves against other counties across the state by what is our debt as a percentage of the debt limit. So I thought there's dollar signs going up on the left-hand axis, and there's a percent signs going up on the right-hand axis. The first thing I want to show you is our total outstanding bonded indebtedness. That's our bonds. That's how much bonds we've had over the last 5 years, 13 through 17. And it's fairly consistent. You can see we're in that $50 to $60 million range. It goes up a little bit each year because we do a new bond issue each year. And we retire some debt, we take out some debt. Fluctuates a bit, but not too much. Our second line here shows it's a green line, and it's very similar to the other one, and that just subtracts out certain forms of our debt that aren't subject to the debt limit. So the calculation is actually performed on a number that's a little bit lower than the yellow line. So what is our debt as a percent of the constitutional debt limit? It's that pink line at the bottom, and this time it's a percent, so we use the right-hand axis. And you can see that as a percent of our total allowable debt, we're right here at 11%. So we've only spent 11% of what we could be spending. And it really hasn't gone up or down all that much over the last 5 years. And Moody's will be glad to see that it really hasn't gone up or down too much over the last 5 years. One of the key ratios they look at. So we're looking at 10% here, 12% here. We're at 11% right in the middle. So I think that's a comfortable place to be. I think this is one of the questions that's been asked in previous years.
Rick, I don't know if you want questions now.
Sure.
Okay.
I'll stop at any point. You can.
Can you give me, how is that, as a sort of in English, as policy, what's the debt limit based on?
It's based on a New York law, and it's not something that we set as a policy for ourselves. So that there is a percentage of your total debt which they consider, they make you calculate 5 years of your assessed valuations, and it's formula driven.
Right, but the question is, the formula is based on
state law.
No, I know, but that law is based on your total assessed value.
Yes, that's part of it.
Of the land in your county.
Yes.
Okay.
Do you have a better explanation?
Not really, but it's one of those formulas similar to the tax cap that have multiple factors. There's a 5-year rolling average of assessed value. They look at different types of debt. So, for example, some debt like bands aren't necessarily part of that calculation. I think your question is correct me if I'm wrong, is 11% good or not, or who sets that in terms of your debt limit? So you can obviously go higher as a percentage of your debt limit. You can't go above 100% as your debt limit. This is a policy decision by counties, municipalities, as to we want to keep what I would traditionally call a level debt limit, meaning you're always striving to try to stay level versus going up and down. So Rick's comment about Moody's will like that, that's a relatively low debt limit. I think the other ratio that probably isn't here is your debt compared to revenues, or your debt revenue ratio, which is probably very low, as I would say. Mm-hmm. This is a policy discussion that's usually worked into your capital planning discussion about, all right, we want to strive to keep our debt limit as a percentage, our debt as a percentage of debt limit below 12%, because it means we constantly have this amount of debt out there. It constantly allows us to invest regularly, and so on and so forth. If you went back to the last slide, just real quick, the last slide with that right there, you'll expect that to spike in future years because you're going to spend $24 million in improving the airport. So your investments in capital assets will jack up a little bit over the next few years, which is perfectly okay. When you go back to this question about debt as a percentage of your debt limit, that's a clearly policy decision, and it's usually tied into the level of investment you want to make on an annual basis and your capital plan.
So that was part of my question, but the other part was, what's it, we have a target fund balance that's a percentage of our total expenditures. So the constitutional debt limit, you're saying, is based on your overall total assessed value of your land? That's.
We can get the exact formula to explain.
I just want the words. Deborah's nodding and Rick's not. Okay. Thank you. Thanks. That's great. Anna?
Brief question. You mentioned something about, or I thought you did, and I want to make sure if I understood you correctly, that this is weighted comparable to the rest of the state.
It's one of the benchmarks that you often find when you're looking for benchmarks. Like we have performance benchmarks for each department. One of the things we'd look at as a county as a benchmark would be this particular figure.
But the formula isn't standardized in any way.
The formula is standardized, so everybody calculates it using the same factors. Yes.
But if Moody's was looking at three counties and two of them had debt ratios of like 70% and 80%, and we were at 11%, who do you think would look better?
Right.
We would.
Well, that I understand. Yeah.
Okay, so I opened the Pandora's box. That's good. I got Rich, Mike Sigler, and then Dan. Anybody else? Okay, Rich.
So 11% looks really good. What is bad? You said 70% would be bad. How high can you go before the state says you've got a serious problem?
You can't go above 100%.
Well, the city is at 80%.
I'm serious.
No.
Like, you won't be able to issue bonds if you go above 100%.
See, you have to submit this calculation each time that you do bonds to the comptroller's office. And, you know, and then they give, like, a final stamp of approval before you hit the market. We've never had any problem with them getting that turnaround in 24 hours, but normally what happens with, like, with Moody's, for example, they'll rate different counties with different credit ratings, and this is just one of the numbers that they use to help tell you, you know, what your credit rating is.
Are there municipalities out there with 70%?
Ithaca. Ithaca's at 80%.
Okay. And they do stress. The comptroller's office, I think, does stress ratings, too, and right, so certainly the percentage will factor into that.
This is part of your municipal stress rating. This is not to be confused with your constitutional tax limit. This is your constitutional debt limit. Constitutional tax limit has to do with how much you can tax in relation to a similar five-year rolling average of assessed value. I think, to answer your question, the higher it is, the more chance you have of a less favorable review from rating agencies, and may suggest you're more vulnerable because you're taking on more debt, unless there's an explanation as to why you're doing it and you have a capital plan that outlines it and it's planned. So generally, you always want to try to keep low debt or manageable debt when it gets, I don't know if there's a certain level where it's not manageable anymore, but generally, if you were to see this to be higher, your constitutional tax limit would be higher, your fund balance numbers would be lower traditionally, therefore you're having higher risk. Higher fiscal stress.
And Jason mentioned the stress test. There's a stress test monitoring system in place by the state that they look at all towns, villages, and counties. I look at all the towns and villages for the consortium because we just added like five more members to the consortium. I think we're up to 36 now. But I'm the guy who has to look at the AUDs for each town and village. And I've gotten used to going into the state's stress monitoring system because it's so much easier just to go in and look what the state has already done, because they take all these variables and all these different benchmarks and they boil it down into a score, and that score tells you whether they're in heavily stressed category or moderately stressed or just a little stressed or not stressed at all. And we're always at the very bottom of the list as not stressed at all.
We're one of the few communities that have a zero stress rate.
Zero.
Zero. Yeah, there's only a few. There's only a handful that have a zero.
We haven't gotten this year's score yet. That won't come out for a couple months yet. I think maybe in a month or two, September. But, yeah, last year we were at zero. You know this.
Right, 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 yeah.
Because you remarked upon it in one of your emails. Didn't
I did. That's another story. And, Marsh, I hope you're taking notes. So, Mike Sigler and then Dan.
Actually, I have, like, two questions. So 38.8 unassigned fund balance, that just sounds high to me.
Yeah, we're going to get into...
Not that it's high. But, I mean, that's awesome. But
we're going to get into that.
Okay.
I got three slides on that.
And my other question about that same issue is, what happens? Does that money just sit in a bank? I mean, we're not just sitting on a big pile of cash.
Well, we earn a little bit of interest on it, but not that much. For one thing, that what we can say, that the higher the level of reserves... And we're going to get in that slide in a minute. But the higher level of reserves, the higher your credit rating is.
Right.
Remember last year or 6 months ago when I brought you the last Moody's report? They said we can't hit that top level until we hit 25% undesignated or unassigned general fund reserves. Well, there was not a lot of interest from the legislative standpoint to maintain that level of reserves because we felt that might be too high on a regular basis. But there's different – I saw one town or village, they were at like 400% of their undesignated reserve. And that's just their choice, the way that maybe they need to have that much for I don't know what. But we're going to look at different reasons on why you would keep a fund balance and why we have a fund balance policy and what we can do to achieve being closer to what our fund balance policy is.
Are we allowed to do anything with that that earns us more on it than –
I mean, I think this is a much greater conversation about your fund balance. But, yes, I mean, your general fund balance, your unassigned fund balance is that it's not assigned anything. It's not designated for specific reserves. I think when we get talking about where we're at a comfortable level of unassigned fund balance, and I think, no pun intended, you balance that conversation with what are your expected future investments and what are your expected future liabilities? And this is where I think, you know, Rick and I have started to have some conversations about, you know, future reserves, future capital projects, future plans that you have when it comes to capital investments as to do you want to continue to take on debt to finance those, or do you have the ability to do cash for capital with some of those? Where are your priorities infrastructure-wise? So I think that's a bigger budget discussion. You know, fund balance, if you were to take a lot of the counties across the state and the country about, well, you have a AA rating, correct? Do you have a AA rating?
Mm-hmm.
I think you're going to look at those. If there's a lot of metric, you know, measurements that the Moody's will use to compare all of them, you'll see most of them have a fund balance number probably above 20%. Or in around that mark. If you want to continue to maintain a bond rating around that mark, you've got to maintain a fund balance around there that also balances out your debt limit. It also balances out your tax limit. And then if there's excess, you know, fund balance that you have priorities coming up, just capital projects alone is a part of that discussion. The energy discussion you had at the, you know, the earlier part of the legislative meeting can be a priority. Then you start to talk about, are there specific reserves that we want to fund or finance to avoid taking on more debt in the future or to take on less debt in the future? That's really where I think you get into the discussion about fund balance use, if you have it. You blend in your level debt discussion along with it, and that wraps up into your capital planning. And then you have a good discussion about what's the best use of your resources. Because, I'm going to be getting ahead of ourselves, one thing I'll note, while you had a $4 million fund balance growth, $3.5 million of it was from one-time revenues. Sales tax and casino money. Now, we've been on the back end of that as well as on the front end. We're on the front end now, which is great. We'll be conservative with it. We'll be smart with it. We'll put it towards one-time expenses if that's where we want to go with it in order to offset that, because you very easily, in any given point in time, you could have the reversal of that. So, you know, those are part of the discussions when you talk and looking about if you didn't have that amount of growth in those two revenues, you'd have a $500,000 fund balance growth. Different story.
Well, they were that amount over budget.
Correct.
So it was the conservative planning
on the front end.
The previous year that said, okay, we're going to build ourselves a cushion, and that cushion came in that way.
So, I mean, that has two sides to that story. So, I mean, those are all parts of the discussion when you look at fund balance growth. Why is it growing, and then what's the expected outcome?
Okay, Dan, Anna, and Deborah.
Can you go back to the last slide, please? Is it fair to say that the bonded debt is capital cost? Is that an accurate statement?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, because there's really two ways to pay for capital. You either reach in your wallet and you write a check and you pay cash, or you borrow. And to the most part, the lion's share of our big capital is borrowed. You know, we do some pay-as-you-go projects, and we do some when they're sometimes, like we had a perfect example, I think it was this meeting tonight or maybe it's the next meeting, where we went over on a project and we didn't want to stop the project. We had to make a conscientious decision. Do we go forward or do we pay more? And in this particular case, we had some funds in the D fund or the road fund to take care of that overage in that particular road construction project. This is a general fund that we're talking about here right now. The D fund is totally separate. But each one has a fund balance, and each one can contribute to capital cost.
So we have a capital plan. It's a 10-year capital plan, 20-year capital plan. There is 10-year capital plan where it's been projected out what our debt's going to be, what our bonding is going to be over that. Does it – I mean, you don't have that in your slideshow today, do you?
No, but I do remember – Joe's, that's very similar to this. And when you look at that, and Jason's will be very much the same. I think they go out 20 years even. But you'll see that these numbers don't move that much. The debt, the bonds may go up and continue to go up, but this down here doesn't really change that much. And the portion that comes out of any one year, like for cash pay-as-you-go projects, you might have almost none come out in one year, and then the very next year, you could have a whole lot come out, and then maybe none for the next 2 years, and then a whole lot again. So some of the pay-as-you-go projects, you know, vary quite a bit. But there is a section in that spreadsheet that you're referring to that shows the amount that the local levy increases each year. Remember that?
Yes.
I think it's 0.25% of the levy is added to the tax base each and every year, and that's committed totally towards capital and debt service costs, not for anything else.
Do we have a capital program presentation scheduled? No. Is that part of the budget process, before the budget process?
Your capital plan, I think, is set to be new. I know, I think it goes as far as 2019. That was where you made the commitment, quite a few years ago, made the commitment of a X amount of percentage of your levy to be contributed to capital planning. I know next year one of the things we'll want to focus on is updating that capital plan for the next 10 years after that.
So, I'm sorry, but is there a presentation scheduled as part of the budget process or before? Last year we decided we wanted one before budget, which I know is, we have no time left before budget.
I know I intended to having a big component of the budget presentation or budget itself contributed to capital planning.
Will it include a projected line of what our debt capital?
It can, yes.
Okay, thank you.
And I think that's part of the discussion is, you know, what's your level debt? I think the goal is to try to, since you've maintained this, you're going to want to try to keep it around there for a variety of reasons. And then what's that? That then opens the door to what is capacity?
I guess I'll stop after this. I guess what I'm bringing this up, because when you're saying it's not changing much, I see where the percent is not changing much, but it went from roughly $45 million to $55 million in 4 years. That's a 20% increase. That's not nothing. That's actually a really big increase to me. So I'm interested in what we're projecting out in 5-10 years.
That's sort of why I was asking where the debt limit comes from. So, for example, if the purple line is related to our overall assessed property value, then, yes, we understand that's going up, so the top two lines would also go up, would be able to go up and leave the purple line flat, right? So, Dan, are you asking to kind of have a dedicated set-aside time to really educate ourselves on the capital plan before? Because often we end up kind of in the middle of the expanded budget committee meetings, and it ends up getting 10 minutes, right?
I'm specifically interested in capital plan as it relates to our bonded debt, because that's... Yeah.
Right. So... If that's a Mike Lane question, Mike talking to Jason and Rick, I mean, if there's a way to, I know the next 6 weeks, 8 weeks are like, it's a good thing you moved, Jason. So
yeah, right.
You thought life was going to get easier.
Yeah.
So if there's a way to do that, I think that you're right. We often end up kind of squeezing it in, and especially, I mean, even us returning old legislators, always good to have a refresher and certainly to get us started in the...
Let us look at it on the EBC schedule, see what we can do.
I think an important piece of this would just talk about how the debt limit is constructed, how that percentage is constructed, and I think that will explain a lot to you as to why you're seeing debt numbers increase but the percentage is staying the same.
Right.
And then also talk about what is being bonded so you can understand as well. I think that's probably break it down that way.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Anna and then Deborah.
I was just making a correction on the record. Since May, this is for Rich, it's been 70% debt ceiling in the city, but the water treatment plant is a separate file, and that is $30 million on top of that. At least that was what it cost. So I just wanted to, since we're on record.
Deborah?
So I'm curious. I can understand that from the perspective of bond rating, it would be great to have a pretty hefty general fund balance. But do you ever get dinged? If you've got a taxing district like a water district or a sewer district, if you end up maintaining a very high balance in those funds, the state comes along and says, you know, maybe you ought to lower your fees.
Or school districts.
Well, exactly.
School districts get written up all the time when they have too much of a fund balance. Legislatively, they cannot exceed a certain amount.
Right.
And they get dinged all the time. Not true for counties.
Okay, so the only accountability we have for taxing versus a healthy fund balance is the taxpayers.
It's your job.
Yeah, okay. Thanks. That's what I wanted to know.
I mean, I would add to that you can get dinged for it, and it's just good public policy to have a plan. You know, there's nothing wrong with having a good fund balance. It shows liquidity. It shows versatility.
And having and backing that up with an expected understanding of what your upcoming capital expenses are is perfectly legitimate. I think where you get into trouble is why you have just excessive fund balance, no planning in place, and tax rates continue to grow and grow and grow, and there's really no explanation for it, which I don't think is the case here.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. On revenues and expenditures in the general fund, I've taken 10 years worth of data here, and in the revenues and expenditures, not only does it show the operating revenues and expenditures, I folded into that all transfers in and transfers out to other funds, because that they're showed separately in the financial statements. I want to combine all them in all together. So revenues include transfers in, expenditures include all transfers out, and the revenues here in this last year is $165 million is our general fund revenue. Expenditures right here were $161 million. The unassigned fund balance, which you normally don't graph on the same graph as revenues and expenditures, but I wanted to, so I did. Unassigned fund balance in 2017 was $38.8 million. So this is the number that we've been talking about all along. And it's at 38.8 even after the $2.9 million transfer out for the purchase of the Tompkins History and Culture Center. So that all took place in 2017. That transfer out came out ahead of that. So we can see here where it's been pretty consistent during these early years, 2008, 2009, 2010, and I believe it was right around here. Oh, yeah, this is where I got hired, and it's just gone up.
Thank you very much.
In 2013, you did formally set, and this is before when I was here, Dave Squires was just finishing up on doing a formal fund balance policy, which some of you remember. And at that point in time, that formal fund balance policy for the general fund was set at 10%. But every year since then, we've gone from 20 to 30, and or not 30, but 23, right up to $38.8 million. And I'm going to show you on another slide what that is as a percent. Oh, before we do that, here's the increases in our fund balance over the last 5 years. Million and a half, 4.5, 5.5, 5.5, 3.8. So this is not the fund balance figure, but how much our fund balance actually increased from year to year to year to year. And then as a rule, the GFOA, Government Finance Officers Association, because I'm always asked this, what do our auditors recommend? Well, our auditors recommend 15 to 20%. That's what they tell all their clients. GFOA recommends no less than 2 months of regular general fund operating regular revenues or regular general fund operating expenditures, however it is that your policy calculates it. So what's that? That's 16.6%. So the auditors are right, and so is GFOA. And that is what they're recommending, even though our general fund balance policy is just 10%. This shows the unassigned fund balance as a percentage of general fund budgeted revenues. It goes back to what I said before, is that in 2013, even though your fund balance policy said 10%, you were already at 12.8. And then each year it's gone to 15.2, 18.6, 22, to where we are right now at 23.7%.
So if I can just say, so there are opportunity costs, too. This is where you say, for example, you might decide, if your number goes really high, you might decide it's more prudent to spend cash for something instead of borrowing it.
Yes.
Or you might decide to make investments in something that will pay off down the road. you know, something as a policy matter you might take on.
Like what, lottery tickets?
Like housing. Like housing. Like, you know, or a TCAF facility or something like that. Like, that's a lot of lottery tickets, but that's actually the casino, isn't it?
Dollar and a dream.
It would have to be legal, though. It would have to be legal.
Right. Okay. So when it seems like, so even though, as you said, our policy is 10%, and you say GFOA says 16, north of 16%, we're way above both the policy and the recommendation. Right?
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
And normally we go back to Jason's remarks is that you have to have a plan in place that
right.
shows. I think Joe last year did an email to most of you or some of you that showed, and here's the plan on how we're spending, I forget how much it was, $4 or $5 million of it. And there was like $2 million that was for next year's budget. He put that right in there. And then he was going to, you know, that included about $1 million extra for OTRs that he wanted to give the legislators at the end of last year that they normally wouldn't have gotten. But they committed more of the reserves to pay for some of the OTRs. And there also were plans for things like, let's buy a building and pay cash. Tompkins Trust Building, $1.9 million. We're up to plus...
2.9.
Now we're up to $2.9 million with the cost. So, you know, and we're committed to, you know, paying cash for that. So that's okay. You know, if that's your plan and that's what you ordain as being the right way to go, that's fine. I've always segregated in my mind at least $2 or $3 million that we should be conscientiously moving into the capital projects funds as a capital project reserve to pay for a myriad of upcoming projects that are small in nature, too small really to roll up into a bond, and it would probably cost more than it's worth. And those are the types of things that Jason and I have to combine, you know, our ideas to come up with which of the capital projects over time are going to qualify for using cash reserves. But I would move almost immediately, you know, like $3 million into the capital projects for that seeding of that capital project reserve. And that doesn't even address what Jason mentioned about the airport. What are we going to do about the airport? We don't know what our costs are going to ultimately be. We know we're going to get a grant. We know the airport's going to cost X. It might cost X plus $2 million, you know, when the big costs come in, et cetera, et cetera. So we don't even know what our particular costs are going to be. So there might be some future discussion on do you want to spend any of the general fund reserves on airport? But that's go ahead.
So the 23.7, is that before or after, you know, whatever has to be spent for 2018?
That's actually it is undesignated, which means the portion that's being spent in 2018 is already reserved in another component of fund balance. So it's already come out.
Good.
Remember, we have different levels of reserves. We have committed, and we have restricted, and we have assigned, and we have unassigned. So what you're speaking of is already in another bucket somewhere else.
Good.
And in case you ask, how do we reduce this 23? Say you wanted to reduce it 1%. Or 2%. 1% is equal to $1.6 million. $1,638,337. So every time you reduce that 23.7 by 1%, you would be spending $1.6 million worth of reserves. Now, for something completely different. It looks the same, you say. This is the road fund of what we were speaking about earlier. When we sometimes go over on a bridge or road project, we often bring to the legislator, let's take money from the D fund. Let's take money from the road fund. Well, now you can see that it, too, has a fund balance. And as in the general fund, I've included transfers in with the revenues and transfers out with the expenditures. And You see that there's a lot of consistency in revenues generally exceeding expenditures, except for the last 2 years where you see here expenditures. We did that on purpose. Why did we spend more than we took in? Because we wanted to start to bring this down.
We were starting back in 2016 a conscientious effort to spend down some of this fund balance. So you can see the fund balance in the road fund has been fairly maintained right until the last couple of years, but we're still over $2 million. Actually, it's $2,278,000 just in the road fund. The next fund is the airport fund, called Transportation Fund in the financial report, but we call it the airport fund. The assigned fund balance at the end of 2017 is this $673,000. And that's up a lot from where we were over here, where we had a negative $337,894. So there was $187,000 of excess revenue over expenditures in 2017. That's the gap between here, revenues coming in over expenditures. And no, I'm sorry. The difference between here, part of that was made up of the PFC audit. When we did the PFC audit, and part of this came from the transfer of cash from the debt service fund back into the airport. So they netted out about $200,000 to the good in this particular year. So if you would have backed this out, the revenues would have been just 12.4% higher than the year before, and the revenues would have gone up 9.3%. So this is an exaggerated year this past year because of the PFC audit, where we had to transfer some money back to the airport. It put the airport in much better financial shape, especially going forward with the state looking over our shoulder and wanting to grant us some money and us thinking about going out into the markets for possibly borrowing money. Because had we gone back out, my biggest headache for the first few years I was here was everybody talked so gloriously about the airport and how wonderful it was and it is and everything, and I just saw it losing money year after year after year. Leslin came to me one year, I think it was in 2014. She wanted me to do a report on the airport, and I was told we never did a report on the airport report, you know, because it looked like this, you know. Because you have revenues, expenditures, revenue. I mean, it just didn't look real good, you know, when you spend money year after year after year. Now, these 2 years, although they look pretty good and we started to achieve a little bit of a fund balance, I do have to tell you that during these last 3 or 4 years, the county has waived its administrative charge of about $126,000 to allow the airport to begin to dig itself out. So you have to take that into consideration. If they would have been paying the full freight of the general charge, you know, their expenditures may have been right up to about what they were, meaning revenues. So I'm glad Leslin had us do that report back in 2014, because that was an eye-opener, and it caused us to look at many things. Now, how often are we ever going to have a PFC audit that's ever going to give you a one-time fix like this? Well, never. That's never going to happen again. And for sake of time, I won't tell you the story of PFC audits and why we had such a big adjustment. But let it be said that we're doing our PFC audits now, and they're up to date, and they're right on time. And the difference here of fund balance that the airport has to work with is really putting us in much better shape. So because we have a little bit of seed money here, they have a little bit of something they have a little something in the game. They can put a little skin in the game, the airport, at this point.
Okay, I think I saw Shauna's hand, and then Anna.
Yeah, I just had a question in regards to the road fund. Can you tell me mm-hmm. what is considered revenue?
They get money from the county clerk's office. There's a designated revenue source that comes from the motor vehicles.
Okay.
I'm not sure what percentage it is, yeah. But there's a function that automatically a highway department gets some money from the county clerk's office, Division of Motor Vehicles. The biggest portion of it is a transfer in from the general fund.
So it shows up as a revenue here, but it's really tax dollars being transferred in from the general fund to the road fund.
Is that state and federal money, or you're talking about our local property money into there?
Local property tax dollars.
So are state and federal?
But they do get state and federal dollars for, like, CHIPS funding and things like that.
And that shows up here?
Yeah, that's all inclusive. So this would include the state dollars, the federal dollars, the local tax dollars, and the county clerk's dollars. That's all what makes up their revenues.
And it's the same for the transportation. That would include revenue from the airport as well as any state and federal grants that might be?
Yeah, most of their grants are capital grants, which don't show up on the. They have capital funds also that they, you know, use to build the airport with. But this is just operating revenue and operating expenditures. Now, once in a while, they have an operating grant that's state or federal funded, but most of those are capital grants.
Okay. Anna? So I'm looking at the airport fund from 2014 to the present, and we've waived $125,000 fee. The balance, the red line, the amount that the red line is higher than the blue line is greater than $125,000 in those. So basically, I would expect, or I would hope, that if we give them a break, that they could turn it around and make something more of it than just maintaining $125,000. So it seems like they did.
That's true. Since Mike Hall's been here and what's his name, Roxanne and Josh. They have a whole new management style and a whole new operation. They've completely redirected the way that they function there as far as the staff and their overtime and their TSA costs, and everything's been retooled there over the last 2 or 3 years. And I think they're effective, and I can stand behind what they would say, that they're running their operation to be in the red and to stay in the red.
Well, and way beyond the $125,000.
Right.
So when did that team come on? When did Mike Hall come on? Was it 2014 when it turned around?
Yes. I want to say right around here in 2014, 15.
That's a good performance evaluation.
That's also when we cut the fee, the administrative fee.
I was going to say,
you're talking two things there.
I will just add, even if you did have the 100, even if you didn't, you kept the $120,000 fee in there, there would be a slight surplus. It wouldn't be as much. But, it's clear, I think it's obvious, not having been here, but, you know, it has to do with the way they've managed the operation.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's not just the fee.
They're running it more like a business. They're focusing on saying the fee is, though, the biggest portion of the surplus.
There's also the recession. I mean, 2008, 2009 aren't on here, but certainly 10 and 11 and 12, we're still digging out of that. And there were some things that the feds did on moving the air traffic, the sequester and moving the air traffic control that were really damaging at a particular moment. But anyway, so lots of things. So we should move on. Are there any other questions here?
Yeah, I was pretty much a newcomer here in 2013 and was alarmed when I saw these deficits. But when I saw the new management come on board and that they had a plan, meaning you had a plan, and the legislature took action to waive that administrative charge, and I think Joe ordained it in the beginning to be for 3 years, and then he asked for a fourth year and got it. And I don't know where Jason's going on this next year yet, because I guess
we're taking it back.
Lottery tickets.
But, I mean, we're really doing a lot of the work for the airport for free. You know, there's a lot of administrative costs that are involved in us doing, well, just this, reporting on the airport, doing the PFC audits, that they've gotten a free pass for a while. And so at a certain time, you will want to probably come back with an administrative charge. And our cost allocation report that Vineski & Company does for each year, they even come up with the number for us. They come up with an exact number based on performance. So I think it's something that we can at least consider. We might want to get this $24 million project under our belt first to figure out how we're going to pay for that. But yeah.
Okay.
Any more questions on the airport? Okay, I only got one or two left here, and this shows the same kind of slide for solid waste. Assigned fund balance for solid waste at this point in time is $2,756,000. They, too, now have been showing the last 3 or 4 years of ever-increasing fund balance. The revenues go up and down quite a bit differently than almost anything else I've seen, because they get revenues that are linked to China and the recycling rate of paper and, you know, the monetary value of the yin versus the yang and the, you know, all that kind of stuff. So here we've got, you know, revenues in the first 3 or 4 years that went down, and then we've had a year or two where they've gone up. And I wanted you to see that the columns here in blue, the expenditures are fairly consistent. They've made some changes over the last 3 years, and they did not want to be hitting these levels of expenditure. So when Barb Extra brings her budget to us in the next couple of months, she'll explain the uses that they have programmed for this amount of reserves. This is one case where a department is planning on utilizing these reserves almost entirely for capital projects. We don't have any debt for them in the next 4 or 5 years because of these reserves. Any questions on that?
Well, yeah, I don't know how certain we can be, get under the circumstances, that their revenues are going to stay level.
One of the things that Barb has mentioned, I think she's brought Def and I too, is that, you know, she's seeing a drop-off, and she's projecting a drop-off in the revenue this year and a continual drop-off in the next few years just because recycling commodities have really dropped off due to some trade issues internationally. So one of the things her and I will be talking about is, you know, balancing revenue projections, balancing out fund balance, and balancing out rates if there's a need for a rate discussion. Most of her expenses are related to contract expenses, so they're pretty stable because most of her budget's all contract. So part of the discussion that we'll be having at budget is there a balancing act or a leveling act over the course of the next few years? Is there a need for a rate increase or rate discussion? If so, why? How is that balanced out in fund balance? You know, can you ease into that through some fund balance use over the course of 2 or 3 years, that type of thing? She's, you know, a lot more pessimistic about the revenue outcomes, and right now it doesn't look positive, but she's already briefed, I know, F&I on it, and you hear and I have had several conversations on what's this calming effect that we can have to balance that out. So it's something to stay tuned for.
Yeah, I'm just a little concerned if we spend down the fund balance to nothing.
That's part of the discussion of, is there an ability to ease, and if we have to talk about rate increases, is there a way to do that over a period of time, gradually, where you're using some fund balance to slowly balance things versus a drastic rate increase or decrease, that type of thing.
So, thanks.
She's very much, as you know, Barb, she's very much on top of it. We've already had several conversations about it, and we'll get into it over the next 6 weeks about it.
One of these years, I'm not sure which one, though, that the legislator did do a dollar decrease in the solid waste fee assessment, that, and then it was, I think it was put back the very next year. So I'm not sure if it's this year. It doesn't always correlate with the graph, but one of these years here, there was a slight decrease in the fee, and then it was brought back up to what it was in the subsequent years.
And I know the contract expires next year, the year after. Next year?
Yeah, I think it's the year after.
So it's the year after, so that may play a discussion as well. You know, you want to get a long-term contract, recycling commodities are down. You know, it's all going to be part of the discussion.
But she does have a pretty good plan when it comes to the upgrades, and the capital plan in her department are almost totally reliant on this here, because she told me that they wouldn't be, since I'm the guy who has to go out and borrow the money and do that, she pretty much told me that they don't have anything on horizon that I need to look for borrowed money for the solid waste department. And that is pretty much the end of my 1 minute, my 12 1 minute plays.
That was going to be a 10 minute presentation, but that's great. I think we all learned a lot. That's really a terrific presentation. Thank you very much.
We don't need to read this, right?
Anne, yep.
Thank you, Rick, for the presentation. I was just had been saying to I mentioned to Amanda that I went to the budget meeting where the auditors did the presentation, and that really helped. And with your synopsis and the highlights of this, and so maybe if we think of it next year to invite other legislators to hear all of that, make them if they want more nuts and bolts.
Sure. All right, we're going to put the screens up.
I just want to compliment Rick and his staff and Donna. You know, if you've ever been part of an audit, it's not particularly fun. You go week, you know, at a time where you've got to stop everything to interrupt your workday. It's miserable. You've had quite a bit of single audits because of the amount of federal funding we had. So I just want to compliment Rick and his staff. They did a wonderful job. And to have the type of report with no material, you know, or significant weaknesses or material deficiencies, or material weaknesses, significant deficiencies, is a good outcome. This says your internal controls are positive, aside from the performance of the organization financially. So, did a really good job with you and your staff, Rick. I commend you both.
Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. I agree. Go ahead. Screens. Congratulations on that. A very important result, Rick. Thank you very much. And Mike Lane, you want to, while we're on the topic, you want to take Resolution L?
Why, I'd be glad to.
Packet page 43.
Resolution L is the acceptance of audited financial report for the fiscal year ended December 31st, 2017. And I so move.
Seconded by Glenn. Discussion. All right, ready to vote? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's very unanimous. Thank you very, very much. Great. Before we go to committee reports, didn't ask, are there any resolutions or appointments to resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? No? All right. So first committee is Dan Klein, Government Operations.
Thank you. I know it's late, but I am going to mention a few things. I will be brief. We met on July 5th last time, and we had a presentation and a discussion with Greg Potter from Information Technology Department about the website refresh. And I wrote down some words about what he said the refresh is going to be. It's a rearrangement. It's changing the appearance of items on the website. It's making it more mobile-friendly. And if this means anything to anybody, it's changing from Drupal 7 to Drupal 8. but the reason I really wanted to mention it is because you have all received an email from Greg that's got this attachment that's sort of some samples of what he's thinking or what things might look like. And Government Operations Committee in September is going to make a final-ish decision on what we want the website refresh to look like. So this email that you got from Greg is your invitation to put into words or pictures. You can actually make diagrams if you want of what you would like to see happen on the website. Because if we don't get that kind of input from you when it comes September, we're going to say, okay, Greg, this is it. This is what we're going to be doing.
Dan, when was that email sent?
About a week ago, roughly. More than that? Yeah, 2 weeks ago, maybe.
Boy, would you mind asking him to resend it?
Sure.
Appreciate that. Things get buried.
Say it again, please. Yes. So when we originally purchased the website, it came with one free refresh, which we haven't used yet. So our vendor will be doing this, but with lots of input from us. Okay. We also talked about reimbursement rates for legislators for parking and mileage. It was quite a discussion. We knew we weren't going to finish, and we did not. So that's going to be continued at our next meeting. Greg Potter also gave us some information about the status of the census and our role in it. And so So far, what we have done is what's called LUCA, Local Update of Census Addresses. So this is preliminary work that's really important, actually, to basically tell the government what addresses we've got, not who's here yet, but what buildings are here, so that we can go find out later on who's in those buildings. And it's hard to, you have to do it way in advance, because later on you can't, there's fewer opportunities, limited opportunities to actually say, well, wait a sec, we missed this spot. And Greg told us that he believes we are the first county in New York State to submit this information. Next meeting is Thursday, August 2nd, 9:30. It's going to be in the old jail conference room. And one item I can tell you that's going to be on so far is Board of Assessment Reviews, a local Board of Assessment Reviews. We are going to be discussing whether to make some kind of modification for next year and how those are operated. And that is my report.
Thank you very much, Dan. With LUCA, I assume we will be able to update with new buildings that get built, right?
Yes, there is some mechanism for doing new buildings, but less so for things we just missed along the way.
I see. Okay.
So that's why, and also could mention that the county did this work on behalf of many of the towns and villages in the county for free.
Great. Thank you. Any other questions? Amanda?
Did Greg give, like, is there a date that he wants feedback by about the website? Do you know? Because that would be helpful.
To be honest, I didn't read the email he sent out. I don't know.
Okay.
But it is our September GO meeting, which is the first week of September, the one we're going to be discussing it. So
before that.
Sometime, the earlier the better, I suppose, yeah.
Thanks. Leslin?
Can you give me just a little more sense of what the discussion was around reimbursement, mileage, and whatnot?
Yes. So it turns out that we believe that we've been reimbursing improperly. We've been reimbursing improperly, especially for mileage. Parking also, but parking seems less of an issue. For mileage, according to the IRS, if you submit reimbursement for mileage from your home to here, that is taxable. And there's other categories that aren't taxable, and it gets even more complicated than that. And so we have to sort out how we're going to deal with that, and there are different ways to approach it.
Okay, so there's things like that. Yeah. And parking?
Parking, we're not supposed to be doing at all. This doesn't count for conferences when you're out of town. This is for your parking here. We shouldn't be reimbursing at all. And the amount of money that's submitted for reimbursement for parking is only that much, and the amount for mileage is much, much bigger, so it's a much bigger issue.
Thank you.
Mike Lane, did you have your hand up?
I just wanted to report, Dan, that on July 4th, I lit my first legal sparkler in New York, in Tompkins County.
Shut up. No, you didn't.
You're a real rebel, Mike.
Radical. Oh, my goodness. All right. Any other questions for Dan or comments? Thank you very much, Dan. Okay. Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, Anna Kellis, Chair.
Our next meeting is this coming Monday, July 23rd. Some of the things that we will have presentations on for anybody who might be interested, the Food Policy Council is going to come and give a presentation about what our Food Policy Council is, and that we have one, and that it's awesome. So they're going to explain that to us. There's about 250 of them in the country, and we happen to have one of them. And we are also getting a presentation from CCE on water-related programming from Sharon Anderson. So that will be at 3 o'clock on July 23rd.
Thanks, Anna. Any questions? Okay, Budget, Capital, and Personnel. Mike Lane, Chair.
Well, most of my report has been taken care of by various things today. We did, as has been explained, we did spend the first extra hour and 10 minutes hearing from the auditors. That was educational. And, we, of course, you just had a presentation of just under an hour tonight. But Rick, I'm glad you did it the way you did it. You really focused on things that is in our mind. The what we heard on at our meeting was from the auditors was probably a little more global, and they told us what we're supposed to know. But this helped us focus, and I really appreciate it. And I think we're all very happy with the auditing process this year and the way we've gone ahead with it. Taking a lot of work in your department and yourself personally to put this together. I wanted to mention that TCPL, our public library, had its preliminary budget presentation, which it does every year. The three entities, the library, TC3, and TCAT, usually put on a budget presentation for us. And they go to a lot of planning to do that. It generally does do PowerPoints and things. We had some members of the library staff talk about different things that, and the usage of the over-target requests that were granted last year, and also which ones they're going to be asking for this year. I was sad that only three of us, our legislators, were able to attend that this year. We usually get a bigger turnout. Perhaps it was just a bad day, but I hope that in the future, if this continues, that we can all make a special effort to attend this, as well as the TCAT one, as well as the TC3 one that we do. The other thing is we're working on the direct report, the four direct report evaluations. The surveys have been done. The HR department is compiling them for us. They'll be in binders. We're going to be talking about it a little more with the budget people, and eventually you're going to get one of these binders and an explanation of some of what's in there. Then we'll be moving on to a process to actually meet with the various direct reports and talk about goals and other things that we have with them. A little longer than we had kind of hoped, but we had to get this whole process restarted. It had kind of slowed down the last two or three years. And so that's happening. Thank you for your participation in filling out the surveys to everyone. And we've already done our resolutions.
Okay. Thanks very much, Mike. Any questions from anyone? Okay. Thank you. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Liz, I'm being Claiborne Chair.
Thank you. You got WDFC's meeting at her report, I think at our last meeting. I can't remember. And we haven't met since. But I wanted to take an opportunity. I mentioned our magnets, and I just wanted to take the chance to just read what it said. Thank you, Kathy. Inclusion is about all of us and is described as a sense of belonging, feeling respected or valued for who you are, feeling the support and commitment from coworkers and supervisors so that you can do your best work and reach your fullest potential. And this is about inclusion in the workplace, not just inclusion in general. I mentioned just an example of that today and wanted to read the proper thing that WDIC had come up with when we created these nice magnets for marketing. And we will meet again in August.
Thank you, Leslyn. Anybody have questions? All right, very good. For the Housing Committee, we met on this past Monday and got an update from staff on how they are going to be taking forward our kind of directives from the discussion last month. We heard from a nice update from Nels Bone about initiatives at the city level, including potential revision of the CTAP, the IDA policy, to include a provision about affordable housing. And then Jim Salk came in, local attorney and Town of Ithaca Justice, but he was one of the people that Adam Bronfen interviewed about condominium development. So David West and I had met with him earlier, and we brought him in. He came into the committee and talked to us about, remember hearing about the offering plan, the big legal, what seems like the barrier in terms of the Attorney General's office, the big, big, hairy, scary thing that has to be done for condominium developments. He feels it's really not as terrible and as big a deal as it seems to be made out to be, especially if you're talking about larger larger properties, larger numbers of units. So that was encouraging, and we had a good discussion about kind of different kinds of ownership opportunities and how those might be facilitated. So we're gonna follow through and try to make headway on that problem, on the problem of ownership. Our next meeting is Monday, August 20th at 3 o'clock. Are there any questions? All right, thank you. Public Safety Committee, Rich John, Chair.
The Public Safety Committee has not met since our last meeting. We're scheduled to meet August 1st at 3 o'clock here. And the only thing I'd mention is that Jason and I had an interesting meeting with some representatives from the city on their plans for their police department.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Rich? Rich, how are we doing on board outs? I haven't looked lately.
I have to admit I have not looked.
Okay.
So I could.
Okay. All right. No questions? Other questions? Thank you very much.
I haven't heard anything that it's really changed. We've been running between 1 to 5.
Sean, what?
I think a few days ago we were at 2.
Okay.
So that's good.
Yeah.
I continue to be amazed. I mean, there was like this big, oh, my God, what if we lost our variances? All right. Thank you, Rich. Shauna Black, Health and Human Services Committee Chair.
Yes, I have two resolutions that are left, and I would actually like to defer to Henry to move the resolution that he wrote, and I'd be happy to second that.
Packet page 71.
Sorry, Henry.
There's a revised in your red.
Could have given you the heads up.
There's also one in your red folder. Two in your red folder. But we're moving what came out of committee, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Support immigrants and refugees who live within Dauphin County, while noting that the separating of children from parents at the U.S.-Mexico border is inhumane. Resolution 7962.
Thank you. Seconded by Shauna. Go back to Henry or Shauna first.
Go for it, Henry.
Okay. Yes, this resolution is just to note the inhumane treatment that the zero tolerance policy had upon people, immigrants and refugees, crossing the borders. Even though Trump did an executive order, which he discovered he could do, but, you know, there are still many children who are still not reunited with their families. In fact, I have it that of 103 migrant children, 57 were reunited under the age of 5, 46 were deemed ineligible for a variety of reasons. Some of the parents have been accused of committing crimes. Some parents had communicable disease. In a dozen cases, the children's parents have been deported without their children, making reunification more difficult. In fact, I know the government last week argued that they didn't have funding to, in fact, reunite the children who they deported. But the judge sort of rejected that argument and said, yes, you do have the funding. And also, there are nearly 3,000 children in detention across the United States who fall between the ages of 5 and 17. Reunification with the parents is now underway as the government scrambles to meet a court-imposed deadline of July 26th. So this is just a note, because we are a safe and inclusive and welcoming community, and noting that it's an inhumane process and that, again, the children are still separated from their parents.
Thank you, Henry. I think I saw Anna's hand up.
I just wanted to offer an amendment that's in the packet.
We've got a page from you and a page from Shauna.
It looks like the one from me is pretty extensive. The one from Shauna has I think, two small word changes, so they could be combined if Shauna is okay with that.
Sure.
Is Henry okay with that?
Yes, I'm okay with that.
So can I offer that as the amendment of the two of them together?
So okay, so we're gonna take the one submitted by Legislator Kellis as what we're looking with. You didn't say that you've accepted everything as friendly, or you did?
I did.
So the all of the amendments then are accepted as friendly.
Yes.
Okay.
They are substantially different. You guys know.
Well, I can. Yeah, we've talked.
Yep.
I can explain.
I mean, that's what the movers and seconders are allowed to do.
Right.
So I think they don't. It's not like inserting the word "not" in a resolution. It doesn't change the intent, I think. So they sort of add more information. Anna, do you want to help us understand exactly where Shauna's changes fit in? Because yours have gotten moved around a little. Number of children. I'm looking at the word "government" in that whereas. That got moved to
the third whereas on the second page.
It says, okay. Whereas the right. Number of children in HHS should say the number of children in government custody.
Right. And in the same whereas where
third
you got
line.
HHS, you got the federal government, right?
Correct. And I would actually make one small grammatical change in the whereas above that. In the third line, it says every child from containment facilities and shelters is being used and significantly increases, not by significantly increasing, I should say, and significantly increases the length of time.
I think, if I can just editorialize, I think it's better if you just take out by,
okay.
Like put a comma and take out by.
That's fine as well.
To sign the release of any other child from containment facilities and shelters is being used, comma, significantly increasing the length of time. Is that what we're trying
That's
to say?
That's perfect.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Okay, comma, okay.
And then there's one other in the whereas, the fourth whereas on that second page, to remove the word illegally on the second line.
Okay. Anything else?
On the fourth whereas, removing the word illegally on the second line of the fourth mm-hmm. whereas on the second page.
Okay.
And that's what I'd...
Okay.
If that's friendly.
Sure.
All right. Discussion? Mike.
So I was fully prepared to vote for Legislator Black's resolution here. It went through committee. It came out of committee. People voted for it. And I'm sorry, this new resolution is very different from the other one. I mean, I read them both pretty carefully, so I'm surprised that the mover and the seconder would be so kind of, I don't know, they sent it through committee. I don't understand what just went on here. So. I mean, do what you guys are going to do. Legislator Black, thank you for this resolution. I think it was good. I didn't find anything real objectionable about it. I think there are some things that are pretty past tense because they've already corrected the policy, which is stated here in one of the later on in one of the whereases. So I found that was covered. I will question this, whereas the mere fact of being president of the United States without authorization by itself does not constitute a crime. I mean, I've heard that a lot as like a slogan. I don't think that's actually true. I mean, if someone were to show up at JFK and run through security onto the street, I'm pretty sure they would be arrested. So I don't kind of know where that comes from. But, yeah, I think that's untrue. So, but it wasn't untrue enough, whereas I'm that concerned about it in the one resolution. And the other one is just different, and frankly, just saw it recently. So, thanks.
Okay, Anna.
A few things. Kathy Bergen is a local lawyer. She was a constitutional lawyer at Cornell, a professor for many years, and was one of the co-writers of the Public Safety for All resolution. She was the one who shared research. Part of it was from the ACLU and other researchers as well about that statement that you're referring to as a slogan, and specifically refers to the act itself of being on the on U.S. land is not illegal in and of itself. If someone is asked for their nationality and asked to present papers, then they can be brought up for not having those papers proving their status in the United States, and then can be those proceedings can be brought forward from that point. So that's the distinction that's being made there, which is why specifically on the Public Safety for All resolution, it prioritizes not asking. That's specifically what we said, is that we want to separate those two responsibilities and that a local law enforcement wouldn't ask. So that's one thing. The other thing that I want to point out for these pieces that were added, this comes from detailed information from several immigration lawyers who are working in and around the border areas. And these are, it really is just added information of details of what is happening so that we understand that youth are still and children are still being separated, and that their stay in these facilities is being prolonged because of decisions made by ORR in their collaboration with ICE specifically. So the first resolution is great. This is simply providing details of exactly how these lengths of times are being extended. And I spoke during committee with Legislator Black and Legislator Granison that I didn't have the information in writing at the time, but I would provide it after that and bring it forward as an amendment.
Anybody else? Any of the lawyers in the room want to add anything?
I'm happy with it.
Mike?
Call the question.
I would, well, we have to vote on that. Is there a second to that?
Yeah,
second. Lesen, second to that. We have to vote. I was going to say I had another change to suggest, but I won't. All right. All in favor of calling the question, please raise your hand. Opposed? Okay. Mike, take one. All right. All in favor of this resolution as amended here, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That passes 11 to 2.
Three.
No, 11 to 3.
I'm sorry. I didn't see 3. Dave, okay, I didn't see you, Dave. Okay, 10 to 3. That's wrong.
11 to 3.
11 to 3. Go
okay. Home, Martha.
Passes 11 to 3. Thank you very much for everybody who's worked on that. I agree. I think the level of detail is meaningful. Shauna, you have, did we do the other ones yet? We didn't do youth services.
We did the bylaws.
Did the bylaws, that's right. We didn't do Q yet, right?
No, we have not.
Okay.
I would like to move resolution number Q, authorizing acceptance of Raise the Age related Anchor County role. And that was voted on this afternoon, number 7951.
Is there a second? Second by Deborah. Now, so this afternoon, so did you do the one that's in our red folder?
It should be. Yes, it was revised.
Okay, great. Okay, discussion? Ready to vote. All in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. And, okay, anything else from your report?
The only thing I have to report is that we will have our next HHS meeting Monday, August 12th. The time will be from 5 to 7, so there is a time change. Reverend Ken Clark, as well as Jonathan and Jason, are going to do a presentation and provide some updates on the Office of Human Rights.
Okay. Any questions for Shauna?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Monday, August 13th.
Okay. Any questions? Thank you very much, Shauna. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Dave McKenna, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. F&I has not met since our last legislature meeting. We will be meeting in these chambers at 3 o'clock on the 19th, which is Thursday. I have two resolutions.
Get the right one.
Yeah, resolution R, ID 7913, and that has a change to it that I put forth, and that's the one I will be moving.
So this didn't come out of committee, right? This is since committee?
No.
All right, so if you would move the one that came out of committee, and then we'll go back to after it's moved and seconded.
Okay.
So anyways,
budget adjustment to transfer from the highway fund balance and amend the capital program for County Road 119, Cottington Road, highway safety improvements at Burns Road and East King Road intersections, Town of Ithaca, PIN 3753.24. And I would move that.
All right, seconded by Glenn. And so, Dave, you want to?
Okay, and then I would further like to move that we amend that based on the one that I have here. Same name. The difference being the eighth whereas was added, which gives a breakdown of the financials. For a better definition, that's really the only change.
So you should have that in your red folders. Okay. Discussion? Questions? Deborah.
I just want to thank you, Dave, for making that change because it was very clear in the memo, but in the first resolution, I couldn't figure out how much it was actually going to cost us.
We don't know yet either.
Yeah.
All right, so that's obviously friendly to Dave. Is that friendly to Glenn?
Yes.
Okay, great. Ann?
I just also wanted to add that so when I called Jeff Smith, because some people had asked wanting more information in there, so he said things kind of go back and forth depending on who are the legislators. He says sometimes they want more information in the memos, sometimes they want more information in the resolution. I said it's looking like right now we'd like more information, more data in the resolution for the record. So that's what I.
Well, I think we want the numbers to add up.
It doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt, I guess, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think Jason and I've talked about this. I think we want to make sure the numbers are clear. It's important that.
Yeah, because this resolution has been hanging around since 2004. things are a little muddy and probably will remain so until the project is actually completed. So it's a good idea to have the best guess of these numbers in the resolution, I think. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, and to be really clear about what the local money is. So that was an important addition. Shauna?
I'm really glad that this is actually being taken care of. Hopefully. I was speaking with one of my constituents over the weekend, and she actually had an accident on the corner of Cottington and Burns Road over the summer. So it sounds like this is really needed. Do you happen to know when the actual work is going to be done?
I can't tell you right off the top of my head, but I can find that out.
That would be great. Thank you.
It should be done this construction season.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it should be done. I don't think this is a two-year construction season.
No, I think it'll happen this year.
Yeah.
I just don't know when they're going to start exactly.
And that's the next resolution.
Yep.
Oh, Diana?
Yes, and someone was killed there, too.
Right. You've had a few fatalities there.
Two? Yeah, there's been
a few fatalities for the few. Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else? Ready to vote? Short form roll call.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. All right. Next one is on packet page 88.
And that would be Resolution S, ID 7913, award of bid for County Route 119, Connington Road, Highway Safety Improvements at Burns Road, East King Road intersections, Town of Ithaca, pin number 3753.24. And I so move.
Seconded by Glenn. Discussion. All right, let's get this going, right? All in favor? Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much.
And that's my report.
Any other questions for Dave? All right, thank you. Transportation Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
That's the committee standing between us and going home. We did meet fairly quickly. We had the folks from Lyft and Uber were invited in to talk to us as our continuing investigation about the status of the ride-hailing services. The folks from Lyft did come. The folks from Uber were not able to come. They were very helpful and interested in the questions we had. There were a number of things that had been raised by the cab companies that we informed them about, and they promised to get us some further information and get back to us. I haven't received that yet, but once I get it, I'll share it.
Thank you, Mike.
Just wanted to also mention that we had, and much as Jonathan said, things are moving pretty quick with the airport, and Mike Hall came in and briefed us on where we were on the airport project. Apparently it was in the paper that there's a pre-bid conference scheduled. I had a call from former legislator Frank Proto saying that he was quite interested in going to that because he had chaired the original committee that built the terminal and had some concerns about not wanting to I want to make sure whatever happens that the architect or engineers, whoever designed this, are thinking about the architectural integrity of the original building as they're planning. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And that's all.
Mike, do you have any update on the energy systems in the
airport? No.
Okay.
They were looking at it. There's a question about which grant proposal we're going for. Deborah Dawson has raised that issue. I've put it to Mike. Mike's investigating with the engineers. I haven't got a response on it. It's whether we go for the NYPA grant or a different grant. I forgot what it was. Flex something, not one that I know about. Maybe Jonathan knows about it, but it's all right if you don't.
You've talked about both of them, but I don't know the answer yet.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
That's the best I can tell you.
Okay. Anything else for Mike? All right. Can I get a motion on the minutes of July 3rd? Moved by Dan, seconded by Leslin. Comments or questions? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? Thank you. I do have one piece of unfinished business. Before we meet again, Michelle Potteroff is going to be married. We just want to celebrate with you for you, and Kathy's going to be along on the celebration. Michelle, you mean so much to this body with everything that you do, and we're just incredibly happy for you. Motion to adjourn.
See you later.
All right. Move second. And thank you all. We're adjourned.